This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy 2008 year-end roundup, sponsored by InStock Trades and Netflix. Hello and welcome to the iFanboy.com 2008 All Media Year End Roundup. My name is Ron and I'm here with
Connor.
I'm Josh.
And at iFanboy.com, usually we like comics, and we read comics, and we talk about comics, and we come here and talk about...
we don't like them now.
Come back here and talk about it on a weekly basis, about our pick of the week, but we're not going to do that this week. We also like tons of other media, and we're going to talk about it here, kind of look back at the year behind us, 2008, that's coming to an end, talk about our favorite movies, TV shows, music, video games, podcasts, and maybe some comics.
It's sort of a gift to you, but also a gift to us.
Yeah.
Because we can't talk... Well, actually, apparently we can talk about comics constantly, but...
Yeah. But we can talk about other things. A lot of people, we meet people at cons, and they think they just want to talk to us about comics.
So if you're tuning in, looking for the Pick of the Week podcast, that's not happening this week, but it'll be back next week. So yep. Come, you know, don't fret. This is our special end of year and show. So.
This will be worth listening to. It will be. But before we start...
You're making a big claim there, mister.
Before we start, just going to warn you, like we normally warn you on this podcast, we're going to talk about what happened in these various mediums. So media. I know I did that on purpose. So so if you haven't seen a movie or a TV show or heard a record or something that we're talking about, you just be warned, we're going
to
spoil it.
I'm going to try not to
ruin. Yeah, if it's been out, if it's new, I'm not going to try. Yeah. It's a movie that came out in February.
Yeah, exactly. Something that came out over the summer.
Sure.
But if it's on DVD, the statute of limitations are off. Like Iron Man, it's Robert Downey Jr.
We talked about that?
No, we're not talking about
anything left to say about the Iron Man movie at all?
No. All right, so moving in, we're going to kick it off. We're going to get this party started with movies, the year in cinema.
The first movie on the list that we got here is Role Models with our good friend Paul Rudd, who I don't know, and the other one, Stifler.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Sean William Scott.
Yeah. This was interesting because it's co-written by Paul Rudd, Ken Marino, and David Wayne.
Yeah, it's the state. And yeah. This was after The Ten, which was awful.
Oh, I liked The Ten.
Yeah, you're wrong, though. But Wet Hot American Summer, which was very good, this was the funniest movie that I saw this year.
There were a lot of funny movies this year, and it was interesting because the way they positioned it, it was like a two guys get in trouble with the law, got a big brother, two little kids, but it was really crass, and it had that edge that the state comedy tends to have, which is really, you know, which is what I like about it. Like, the writing I thought was great. It was really
good. I laughed a lot. I laughed the whole way through. One thing with a lot of comedies is that they'll spend the first half an hour setting things up, and you'll laugh, and it'll be funny at first, and then you'll be like, got to get through plot, whatever. And then at the end, it's funny again. And like in the middle, you lose. It's sort of
this is funny interest. Nonstop.
It was funny the whole way through. The dude's name was Augie, which prompted 3 minutes of laughter. Aww. Sorry. It did. What do you want? He was a kid with glasses. the return of the kid who played McLovin.
Yep.
There's just like, there was just so many things in this. And it was just little, like, the
subtleties,
idea.
Little subtleties.
Yeah, but the idea, it was like every time somebody said something vaguely, there was like intelligent jokes and then really lowbrow jokes, and like people kept saying like things that sounded like that's what she said, but they didn't say that. It was just Paul Rudd giving a look, and it happened over and over and over. And like the idea, I thought the kiss thing was really funny. Not that they came out in the costume. I mean, that was because they built to it.
Yeah.
But the beginning, it was like this one guy telling this little black angry kid about kiss.
And by the way, the little black angry kid was awesome.
He was spectacular.
He was great. He was really
funny. And like, no one's interested in kiss. You know what I mean? Especially not anyone who wasn't around the first time. But the explanation of what they were, it was like, no, they were these Jewish guys who figured. It was great. It was so many funny things.
Role Models. The people I went to go see, one of them commented that her face hurt from laughing so much. In the movie, which is always a good sign.
You know, one of the things that I liked about this compared to a movie like 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yeah.
Because if Judd Apatow's not involved with the movie, it's either not getting made or it's not funny.
Right.
But with 40-Year-Old Virgin, the whole point of that story was they took this guy who had some arrested development complex where he had action figures everywhere, and his coming of age was that he got rid of everything and moved home with his life, which kind of always bothered me about that movie, since we do the cult comic book thing. But in this movie,
he had to change himself in order to be accepted.
Embrace who you are, be proud of who you are. And the fact that there was a whole subplot involving live-action role-playing.
Yeah.
And
I don't know why they didn't just say LARPing, by the way. Is that copyrighted?
I don't know. Who knows? But the fact that LARPing was a major plot point, and within that, like, the kid had to be himself within the LARP, which was awesome, which was great,
In that little context, Joel Edrulio.
Yes.
He was fantastic.
He was great.
He never broke character once.
And Ken Marino was great as the close-talking boyfriend.
Yeah. Ken Marino's underrated.
Yeah, Ken Marino's really good.
I was surprised by how funny it was. Yeah. I really loved it. And like in the beginning, I just angry Paul Rudd, I was like, I'm two steps from that.
Yeah.
Like Lindsay.
The whole Lindsay, the Starbucks scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lindsay's looking at me going, wow, I know this guy.
That was one I really wanted to see, but didn't get a chance to go see.
There were a lot, and we're going to get through it, but I thought I was surprised at the number of comedies I saw this year, and this was the last one I saw, and probably, I agree with you, the funniest.
Yeah.
But one summer movie I saw, which was WALL-E, this year's Pixar movie, which I always feel bad because, I don't feel bad, but I walk out of every Pixar movie going, that was the best Pixar movie. But without a doubt, WALL-E was the absolute best Pixar movie that's ever been.
WALL-E was, for me, the best
technical looking
computer animation I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
The first 30 minutes alone of just WALL-E on the planet were just amazing. Were just great. They were just quiet and just kind of, you know, like, the economy of the way they told the story and all that kind of stuff. And then just all the stuff when the other robot came down, they fell in love, and that whole montage and that kind of thing. And then, of course, there's the social commentary with the fat people in the chair, the Kevin Smiths of the
I saw WALL-E when I was stranded in San Diego after the con. When everyone else got out but me, and I was stuck by myself in San Diego. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was very good.
Oh, I really liked it.
I thought it had no story that I could latch onto, and I didn't really get into the story until they met the people on the ship, and then the captain I thought was the best part of the movie.
He was great. Jeff Garland.
Someone who I could latch onto, someone who did the right thing, someone who I could identify with. Honestly, the Wally, other than the other Evie was the number. Yeah.
Heartless, cold stone Connor's back.
I know, he is. Yeah.
It was okay, but it wasn't great or anything.
I loved it.
I don't know. It definitely doesn't hold up to Toy Story or to any of those other.
It's a different kind of thing. I loved the production of it.
It was great looking. The animation was astounding.
The animation, the sound design. Yeah. The thing is, what he's talking about is like building a character who you relate to, who doesn't say anything and isn't organic, I suppose. Which right, I did.
I mean, he was a robot, but he had a heart, you know. Like, and it was, and all the other little robots behind, like the little cleaning droid that kept following him, like, and how, and it becomes this ragtag group when they're on the ship and they're trying to get the thing. And like, oh, it was good. So, I loved it.
One movie that just came out recently that Josh and I just took in was Gran Torino, the latest Clint Eastwood film, which, funnily enough, we saw in the middle of the day, like 1 o'clock, and the theater was pretty full.
Yeah.
I guess it's everyone's laid off and looking for something to do, theater screening. I guess so.
Entertainment will do well in a depression.
It was still $12.50.
It was. The funny thing is, when I saw this trailer, at first I was surprised because, I thought the Clint Eastwood had retired from acting. I thought for sure I'd read him.
No, that was Sean Connery.
No, I mean, I recently I thought he'd said that. But the trailer...
I laughed and laughed.
...is a bit misleading.
I saw the trailer and it was like literally... I was like, well, that's some stereotypical shit right there. But, like, at the point where he there's, like, a bunch of stuff happens, and he cocks a shotgun, and he's like, get off my lawn. And I was like, oh, my God, it's the greatest old cranky man ever.
Basically, the story is Clint Eastwood's character is an old blue-collar retiree from working on the automobile line in the suburbs of Detroit. And his wife just died, and he's living in the old neighborhood, which is no longer white and blue collar, and he's like one of the last holdouts. He's a bit racist.
If you are the kind of person who likes to feel uncomfortable in a multicultural theater setting while a rich white man on screen says racial epithets, this is the movie for you.
Although everyone was laughing.
Everyone was including, laughing. There was a couple of moments where you're like, am I allowed to laugh at that?
and he's very, very racist, the character. Yeah. But when bad stuff happens to him... Mm-hmm. People around the theater were like making, you know, sad sounds. So he builds a character.
He is, you know what he was? He was the guy who hates everybody equally. Yeah. So you kind of
he was racist towards everyone. Yeah. Irish, Polish, Italian, black, Latino, Hmong. So
Hmong. Well, if you'd seen the movie, maybe you wouldn't make that face.
All right, I didn't see the movie.
The Hmong. They're
Asian people.
Southeast Asian group in the Midwest. So basically what happens is he's in this neighborhood, there's a gang problem. He hates his neighbors, they're a Hmong family. They get involved in a gang problem. He shows up with a shotgun because they're on his lawn. The fight moves to his lawn. He only cares because they're on his lawn. He doesn't care what's happening as soon as they get off his lawn.
He lived in this like a neighborhood when the auto plants were all well. This was a nice neighborhood, but since then he's the only one there. And like the joke is like you look at his house and it's perfectly clean. The lawn's green and beautiful, and everything else is paint peeling brown. You know,
right
the grass.
And so then he learns to. It's really from the trailer and the poster. You think it's like. The Last Days of Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
But really, it's a movie about an old man finding his place at the end of his life and finding some happiness. He connects with the family. He finds a family he never had. He's not close to his own family, but he meets this new family, and he protects them, and he feels...
His son, played by comedian Brian Haley, who I used to, like... In the early 90s, he was one of my favorite stand-ups. I haven't seen him since. He shows up in this.
But it's an interesting film. I think it's a film that the ending is not what many people are expecting, I think.
No, it is a film that... It needs Clint Eastwood in it. Like this, you want to see the guy really put on a really good acting performance. But also, he totally carries the movie. Without him, it's
well. The thing is, what he does now is he casts a lot of non-actors to be authentic. He cast all Hmong people, and they weren't actors. You could tell they weren't actors. But I thought that lent more authenticity to it because it wasn't like somebody pretending to be a Hmong. They were all
sort of. But you have to be able to act like yourself, even if you're acting.
I didn't have any problem. I don't mind naturalistic people playing real roles, but I thought Clint Eastwood was really good. He's an underrated actor, and I love his films. And he made this film in like 5 months from start to finish, which was amazing.
Recently, I managed to. I'm very happy that I got a chance to go see Frost Nixon before.
I want
to
see this
before the wide release, and like it was like I need to go see this as soon as possible. I want to be able to talk about it. Frank Langella is Nixon, and Michael Sheen as David Frost in 1974 after Nixon's resignation. He wasn't giving interviews. He wasn't doing anything. But there was like a scramble for everybody to figure out who was going to be the first to get him. So CBS was trying to get him. ABC was trying to get him, but they wouldn't pay for interviews. So David Frost, who is this guy who is a British television personality, but he had a talk show very briefly in America. Yeah.
And unsuccessful, right? He wasn't.
It was unsuccessful. Well, no, he was successful because he had a bunch of shows. He had one that was on in Australia. He was just trying to make a lot of things stick, but he was mostly like a glossy kind of character. You know what I mean? Like
he wasn't a hard-hitting journalist.
No, he wasn't. And so he gets the idea, like, well, let's offer a ton of money to Richard Nixon for the interview. And in doing so, he alienates all the networks, so they won't run the show that he's basically staked his own stuff on. And so he goes to do it independently, and he goes to get sponsors. So it's partially about that, and then what you end up with is 12 days, only 2 hours a day, just so you don't think they're just sitting there for 2 weeks, of interviewing Nixon. And it goes badly for almost all of the days, where Frost is not prepared, like he's taking it too lightly. And he brings on a couple of guys, played by Oliver Platt and Sam Rockwell, to be his researchers, who are like, the one guy like hates Nixon. And there's a really neat scene between Platt and Rockwell where Nixon's about to come in. And like, Rockwell's written 4 books about how awful Nixon is. And he's like, so you're going to shake his hand? He's like, no, I'm not going to shake his hand. And like, he comes in. And what do you do? And the president's like, hello. And holds his hand out. And you're just like, oh, yes. it could have been caricature. You know, Nixon's hard to...
He's almost a caricature. He is the caricature,
right,
of himself.
But what it really did was... So this all really happened, of course, and this is a dramatization based on a play. And I had so much fun. It was like political...
Seems like it would historical. Be an acting showcase.
It was. And one of the interesting things is that Nixon, you don't really know... Like, he's a joke now, sort of, to people who weren't around then, but he's a powerful figure. And this, really, this whole thing is just a chess match between him and Frost.
He was very smart. He was crazy, but really, very, very
and
smart.
And the crazy things that he would do would be to unnerve you. Like, for example, just before they're about to start taping, he looks down at Frost's shoes and he's like, you got those buckles on your shoes there. So you don't think that's too effeminate? Okay, go! And, like, they start, you know. And he'd been nailing him all along the way, and then by the end, you know. Victory triumphs. But I loved this movie. If there were flaws with it, and there may have been, I was so blinded by my enjoyment of it that I couldn't tell you what they were. Yeah. It was great.
Interesting. On the same kind of, historical movie tip, I recently saw Milk.
That was the one I didn't get to. I tried.
Yeah, which is the biography of Harvey Milk, who was a politician in San Francisco, who was the first openly gay person to be elected to a
prominent office.
He was a councilman. Selectman, which is councilman.
City supervisor.
Supervisor, which is like a councilman, yeah.
And Sean Penn played Milk, and swear to God, he's got to be nominated. This is the one Sean Penn's going to win on, I think.
Mm-hmm. He's already won.
Did he already won? Oh, yeah. Okay, I don't keep track of these things. I thought it was like an upset. He didn't get it. What did he
win for? Mystic River.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, he'll win again,
which was awesome.
There's a little bit of hometown pride in the same way that I like movies that take place in New York. They shot this. Gus Van Sant directed it, and they shot it all in San Francisco. So it's not, representative of San Francisco. Like, I could take you and show you where they shot that scene and stuff like that. And that was really cool. They mixed it in because what's also interesting is that we're going to start seeing a lot of movies about things that have happened close. Like, this is somewhat in our lifetime. Like, he died in 78. We were babies. Yeah. But there's footage of all the stuff as it happened. And they cleverly intermixed it, not annoyingly. They worked in news footage, but sometimes they recreated it. Sometimes they used the original stuff. The entire cast around him, James Franco... Surprisingly, who can't act out of a cardboard box was great. Emil Hirsch was great.
He can act. He just doesn't get good parts.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, Norman Osborn was... No, Harry Osborn was a little bad.
Yeah, what's that for a part?
I know. But it was a great story. It was great, kind of a true American kind of rise to power kind of thing. Tragic ending. Josh Brolin was fantastic as the other city supervisor who lost it and killed him. And it was, I don't know, just it was, I, and I saw it at the Castro Theater, which is the theater right in the gay neighborhood in San Francisco that is prominently portrayed in the movie. So that
fabulous?
Yes, it was fabulous.
Excellent.
Nice way to go there.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, but it was really, really good. I strongly recommend it. So.
Gus Van Sant needed a win.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
One film I found on DVD I didn't see until it left the theater was In Bruges. Is it foreign? I guess it's foreign.
British.
A little British film, and it's about Colin Farrell and...
Brendan Gleeson. Who, by the way, any movie with Brendan Gleeson in it is a better movie for it.
And an awesome Ralph Fiennes.
This is the fucking scariest man you've ever seen. He's basically bricked up, like, you know, scary.
And it's basically two hitmen from England get sent to Bruges in Belgium to hide out after a hit gone bad. And it's the two guys for like a week. And, you know, you explore what they went through and who they are through this week of...
They're hanging out.
They're just hanging out. They're just talking. Gleason's the older veteran. Colin Farrell's the new sort of guy in the scene who screwed the hit up really, really badly. Mm-hmm. And you find out how horribly badly it went through the course of the thing. And Ralph Fiennes is their really freaking scary boss who shows up to kill one of them.
Ralph Fiennes is basically one of those guys, like, he's got a big career, but, like, when he plays a bad guy, he owns you. Yeah. Like who's the other one?
The first time you hear his voice when he leaves a message, and it's a voiceover of him reading the message, you're just like, oh, shit.
And he's that scary Cockney gangster guy that is the scariest person.
Yeah. And, you know what this movie did? It was, first of all, it was really, really strongly written. I thought it was a really great character piece. But also, it reminds you that Colin Farrell is a good actor. Mm-hmm. And when he gave up on being a Hollywood star, and he gave up on it. He said, I'm not doing any more big Hollywood films. I'm just going to do these kind of films. I think he's stronger for that because he's very good in it. He's very sympathetic in it. He breaks your heart at a few points. But this is one of those films that went completely under the radar, but it got nominated for a Golden Globe.
Wow.
And it's a really good gangster film. It gets really kind of violent at points and very bloody at points.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. It was good. It was a nice little movie. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because you hear gangsters. And
it's funny and it's sad and it was it's exciting. It's good.
The Visitor I saw recently from, oh God, I forgot his name. The director is the guy who wrote and directed Tom McCarthy. Is that right? Yeah. The guy who wrote and directed The Station Agent a couple of years ago, which is literally, it's one of my favorite movies of the past few years. The guy's name, he's like a character actor. He's one of those guys that you watch a movie and you go, it's that guy, Richard Jenkins.
Yep.
He played
the father at 6 Feet Under.
He played the father in Step Brothers.
Yeah.
But he's just like, he's that guy.
He's a character actor. Yeah.
You know, he's done a ton of He's done a ton of movies. Yeah, yeah. You just don't notice him because he plays roles that don't really stand out.
But he's always good in them.
Yeah.
He is. This is about a guy who is living by himself in Connecticut. He's a college professor and his wife's dead. And he's basically really kind of sad, and he ends up going to – he has an apartment in New York City that he's had for years, and he doesn't go there. He finds that people are living there because somebody – like
squatting it.
Yeah, but they don't know that they're squatting it. And he becomes friends with them, and one of them is from Senegal, and one of them is from Syria. And it's like literally that's all the explanation. That he sort of like hangs out with them, and it opens him up, and then the one guy gets put into deportation, and they try to get him out, and he meets the guy's mother. It's just about a guy – who'd been very closed off, sort of opening up a little bit. It's a very, very, very well-acted piece. If you remember The Station Agent at the beginning, it feels a lot like that movie. It's almost the same tone where, like, in the beginning...
One sad character.
You ask somebody's like, so, hey, what's going on? And it just goes, yeah. Like, he just wants the conversation to be over because he doesn't know how to deal with people. Probably a stronger ending than The Station Agent.
The Station Agent just kind of ended.
Yep.
But I have The Visitor and literally on DVD with my Netflix sitting on my table at home. I haven't...
Yeah, if you like The Station Agent, check that out if you haven't watched both of those movies.
Richard Jenkins was great in 6 Feet Under.
So, movie I was really excited to see that I finally got, I almost missed, but I finally got into the theater to see. It was Jonathan Demme's Rachel Getting Married.
Supposed to be great.
Which was really, really good. But it was a different type of movie than I normally see. Straight up drama. No, you know, like, and it was also shot almost, I don't want to say verite, but that's so, I don't know, but very.
It's verite.
Yeah,
so.
Very verite. Focuses on Anne Hathaway, who it starts with her getting out of rehab to attend her sister Rachel's wedding up in Stamford, Connecticut, actually. A little Connecticut connection there. And it was shot on location, and it's over the span of a couple of days from the rehearsal dinner up until the wedding, until the day after the wedding. And it was... There were two things that were really great about it. It was one that it was just very realistic, the dialogue. It was written by, and I can't remember the woman's name, Sydney Lumet's daughter.
All right.
Yeah, and
I heard an interview with her somewhere.
And it was just the story and the dialogue was just so realistic. Like, it was this creepy, weird peering in on these people's lives that was just so realistic. And then additionally was the way that the story developed, how you think that the whole center of attention is going to be Anne Hathaway's character and being out of rehab, which is a huge thing, but turns out her family suffered this horrible tragedy. They had a younger brother who died and the ramifications of dealing with that. And the whole cast was great. Bill Irwin, who plays Mr. Noodle on on Sesame Street for those of you kids.
He's a physical comedian.
He's a physical comedian. He was the dad, and he was so was just great. It was great to see him in a great role, and you know, and the whole thing, the whole movie was just. And it was one of those movies where it's literally this silence on the screen, silence in the theater. Like you shift in your chair, and everybody hears it.
Yeah.
Like, and it was like uncomfortable, but wonderful to watch.
I've heard it's harrowing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
At points.
Yeah, but really good. Really, really good.
Awesome.
Painful, but good.
This year was the comic book movie year, where we did 6 or 7 special shows on comic book films.
We talked about them already. Just
right.
We didn't just.
But one movie we didn't talk about because it wasn't based on a comic book property was Hancock.
That's not a comic book movie.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's not based on a comic book.
It's a superhero movie.
It's a superhero movie.
Superhero movie. It's not the same as a comic book movie.
Right, right.
I saw this recently, and it was. It was good. I mean, I wanted to talk about it.
It was awful.
No, it wasn't.
From everyone.
Yeah.
That's not true. I've heard many mixed things about it.
Yeah.
First of all, this movie, just it's the rejuvenation, continues the rejuvenation of Jason Bateman.
Oh, yeah.
He is fantastic in it. He's the one guy that, Hancock is, what I liked about it was he's not a normal character that you find in superhero films.
Yeah.
He doesn't really like being a superhero. He's sort of a fuck-up as a superhero. He's
drunk. And yeah.
He's a drunk. When he saves stuff, lots of damage happens. People get hurt. He doesn't, you know, he does it because what else is he going to do? But he doesn't really like it. He doesn't seek it out. He's a sort of a misanthrope. And it was interesting to watch because when you have a whole summer of big time heroes standing there with their hands on their hips and being heroic, he's kind of just like, whatever. All right.
I thought it was a great trailer. I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, I'm interested in that, and then I just heard nothing. But
wasn't there like a weird twist?
Well, there's a twist in the middle, and I knew it was coming, so that wasn't as surprising. I thought the first half is really, really good. The second half is not as strong, but I thought it was a really solid film that really it lives and dies in the performance of the actors, which are Will Smith and Jason Bateman and Charlize Theron, and they're all good actors. It was pretty good. I mean, it's set up for a sequel, made a ton of money. It's never going to make a sequel.
Are they going to? Yeah.
Well, it made like $500 million worldwide. Peter Berg. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it was, I enjoyed it. It was Peter a good. Berg. It was a good rental.
Yeah.
I saw Quantum of Solace not once but twice. Not because I loved it that much. It just worked out that way. I saw it like once in the middle of the week, and then later that week they were like, "Let's go see this," and I was like, "Okay." apparently, this is a movie that people have had a lot of problems with critically. I think I've seen complaints about it that it wasn't as good as the last one, and it may not have been, but I didn't notice. This was just another Bond movie. Daniel Craig proving to be what might be my favorite Bond at this point. As he's just getting broken down over and over again. There was a lot of fights and action and all that stuff, and it was fun. And Mark Forster's the guy who directed it, you know. He's a guy who's done so many sort of different movies, you know, like he did Stranger Than Fiction and this what's the one with the Oscar for Halle Berry?
Monster Ball.
I mean, like, he's just like, he's all over the place, and I respect the dude for that.
Did you do the last movie, Casino Royale?
No.
So now, the one thing, I don't know, we talked about this last year, I'm not a Bond fan.
Sure.
Was it last year, Casino Royale? Was it
Yeah.
A year? Yep. Wow. Mm-hmm. Is this like a trilogy? Because everybody said this movie felt like a middle movie.
It's totally like, literally picks up right after the last one, and if you
minutes after the last one.
If you don't remember the end of the last one, like, you'll take a little while catching up. For me, that didn't really bug me, because whatever. You know what's funny is that the first time I was watching it, I found all of these plot holes and all of these things that didn't make sense and all these things that had been left, and I kind of forgot about it. And the second time I saw them again. It just didn't bother me, and I don't know if that's whatever the Bond thing is, where you just sort of go, you go with it. It's spectacle, but I didn't feel like it was stupid.
It was a very strong second part, I thought. It was basically, I mean, if you watch the first film, it's this guy who's a secret agent, and then he's found his love, and then it's crushed, and he's taken away, and he's just destroyed by the end of the first film. This film is him dealing with that, so it's all about his rage. The whole film, I saw all these people talk about, there was no story. There was a lot of story. It was all about him dealing with the grief.
It wasn't a complete, A to Z story in the whole thing. There was stuff that they picked up from the last one, and there's stuff that's left over to be done, you know, in the further movies. I'm cool with that. I love serialization.
Yeah.
I also, what's her name?
You know, the woman.
I know.
Judy Dench,
of course. She is, like, my favorite part of this movie.
She's great. She's great.
She's so good. And I had recently watched something else that she did last year.
She's a dame.
She is a dame.
Was it the one where she's a queen?
No, the one where she's the teacher
and Kate Blanchett is the...
Oh, I saw that. Oh,
Notes on a Scandal.
Notes on a Scandal, yeah.
And
yeah.
It just like the difference between her performances, and I saw them fairly close together. She makes a great M.
She's a great
M. Really, really does.
But this is basically, I mean, this is a writ for the trade series. I mean, this is like...
It is.
It's not... they used to balance... The Bond films used to be one and done. They were separate. You didn't have to worry about anything. This is a continuing story. Fantastic second part. I loved it. I loved Quantum of Solace.
I mean, and Daniel Craig, I'm like... there's no doubt that this guy is just a fantastic Bond.
And he starts off rageful, and by the end, he's dealt with it. And that's the arc of the film.
Good stuff.
My action movie fix came in November when Transporter 3 came out.
You were so excited for this.
I was so excited, and let me tell you, it paid off.
This is Ron's most unlikely favorite fetish thing. Is like, I love the Transporter films.
Jason Statham's awesome. He's very charismatic.
Okay, here's what makes a good Transporter film. Okay,
things get moved from one place to another.
No, it's not, very quickly, with lots of explosions. It's a formula. Basically, he needs to be unwillingly pulled. Jason Statham needs to be unwillingly pulled into a plot, into some sort of thing.
Yep.
Backed into a corner. There's a fantastic fight scene.
At some point, his shirt comes off.
His shirt comes off. And then a lot of car chases, a lot of car speeding. This had it all.
Yeah.
The fight scene where his shirt comes off was so, like
erotic?
No, but it was like...
Sensual?
No, there's no reason for his shirt to be off. Yeah, he's fighting with it.
Because he's got really nice abs.
He takes it off and he wraps it around the guy's head and throws him across the room. And it was just great.
I say the same thing about Gordon Ramsay.
There's a girl, of course, the girl he's transporting, who he falls for, and all this kind of stuff.
Didn't that happen in the sequel? Wasn't?
Yeah, it's the same.
I saw the first one. It was fun. Yeah. I like him. I saw him at the bank job, which was excellent. He was really good in it.
Apparently, now, he's a British actor. Yeah. And Luc Besson created the Transporter. Like, he did the first movie. Yeah. He wrote this movie. Luc Besson, he's someone we've been.
Fifth Element.
Jason Statham in England, not very well respected.
It's because he did Snatch.
Yeah.
And the Snatch is not well received there, from what I understand.
Well, anyway, but
he's very charismatic. I enjoyed it.
I strongly recommend Transporter. All three Transporter movies, get him.
And The Bank Job, it's not an action film, it's a drama. He shows he can do both.
They're going to do a fourth Transporter movie.
I'm not surprised.
Now, there's a movie here on the list that's about a brand of VCRs or cameras.
JCVD. Is very unique. I have a hard time. We actually talked about this earlier. I have a hard time really breaking this film down. I saw this last week by myself at a private screening because I was the only one in the theater. And by the end of it, I was like, wow, I really enjoyed that, but I'm not sure what that was.
For those who don't know, the JCVD stands for...
Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels.
This is a Belgian... movie.
It's mostly in French.
It's mostly subtitled. And it's kind of documentary, kind of...
It's very strange. Basically, the story of the film is Jean-Claude Van Damme is a... he is himself. He's a washed-up actor. And he can't get any roles because he's too old. Yep. You know, the movies have moved on. He was a big, big star in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. Bloodsport.
The bone came out of the shin.
Bloodsport. The one where we played twins. Like he had a lot of big.
Time Cop.
Double Impact.
And now he's kind of a punchline.
I thought there was a great the opening scene, which is him doing this amazing
one shot
action scene in one shot where he's going through like an army base and fighting the whole thing, and they finish it and something goes wrong and he goes to the director, who's some Japanese director, and he's like, "I'm 47 years old. I can't do this in one take." And the Japanese guy says to the translator, "Like, what is he? Is he asking if we're doing Citizen Kane again?"
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of very like not you know kind of you know not it's not a good work environment.
So he's got no respect. He's got no money. He's in a custody battle with his wife or his daughter, and she's gonna win. And he can't get any jobs. The one he thought he was going to get went to Steven Seagal.
Yeah, because he did agree to cut the ponytail off.
Yeah. And so he's in Belgium, and he's going to the post.
Is he in Bruges?
I don't know. They never said what city he was in.
Yeah.
And he goes to the post office to get some money because that's where you get money orders or whatever. And he walks into the middle of a robbery.
Yeah.
And then it plays with time. It jumps back and forth with time a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a mistake in that people think he's robbing the bank because everybody saw him go in. He's taking pictures. He's still a huge star in Belgium.
Yeah, they love him.
And so now they see him through the window moving equipment around because the people with the guns are making him block the windows. So they think he's robbing the bank. The press shows up.
It becomes a very Dog Day Afternoon-esque scene with the bank robbery with all the media there and the cops and everybody and this big spectacle type thing. Then it takes a turn.
It breaks the fourth wall. At one point, he's very good in this.
Yeah.
I was surprised. At one point, he sits down in a chair. in the context of the scene, looks right at the camera, and the chair raises up off the set where it goes above. You see the lights. He goes basically into the rafters.
He almost ascends, you know.
And then he's speaking to us, the audience. He has a whole long monologue about his life and how he started off as a young guy. He's a karate champion. He went to Hollywood, couldn't speak any English. He basically made his career out of nothing with his own force of his will. Yeah. And now his life's falling apart, and he's got no money, and he loves his daughter, but he can't ever see her. And it was very moving. He starts crying in it.
Yeah. It's very personal and very,
It was raw. I was shocked. I was, you know, in my private screening, shocked about myself. And then he goes back down into the scene, and the scene plays on. And then it wraps up. It doesn't wrap up the way you think it will.
Yep.
Although there's a funny little twist where he comes out of the bank, and he beats everybody up in a Van Damme style, and the crowd cheers, and he puts his arms up, and he's like
pounding his chest, and then it's kind of like what he wants to happen.
And then it rewinds to what really happens, where he ends up going to jail, which is very unusual, very very unexpected from a person like that who's only done action films, and I respected him a lot for doing it.
It's funny you don't expect these action films to have a sense of humor about themselves,
the thing was there were moments that you laugh, but I don't think you were meant to. I mean, like, I don't know, like, it wasn't
there were little bits of comedy.
Yeah, there were little bits of humor, but it wasn't a comedy.
I guess to be that honest about themselves and open themselves up totally, that much, that's what I mean.
Yeah. There was a guy one of the bank robbers was a huge fan of his and was being fanish around him. That was funny. Yeah, he was making him teach him how to kick cigarettes out of one of the guy's mouths.
That was a very funny scene.
And so when he tried to kick the guy in the head, there was funny bits in it, but it was definitely drama and it was definitely heart. I mean, he got me. When he started crying, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, that was rough. It was good stuff.
From the area of very low-budget guy who directed his own documentary, I wanted to mention Bigger, Stronger, Faster, which is a sort of documentary in the vein of like a Morgan Spurlock kind of thing. This guy who has two brothers, and they all have experience with anabolic steroids.
Yeesh.
And it's a really interesting exploration of the idea of steroids and what they mean, what it's like, how if they should be illegal. It's really like he goes around, he talks to a bunch of people who have experience with them. They talk about it in terms of baseball and the experience of what, you know. He talks to the guy who headed the congressman, who headed the hearings,
right?
You know, and the guy didn't know anything.
Was it Waxman?
It might have been.
Not important. Not important.
But he goes, like, he's in the guy's office, and the guy doesn't know anything. You're like, well, what were you heading this you know hearing for if you don't know anything about it? And you know, it's the idea that there's all these bodybuilders and things, and there's no way any of them look like that unless
normal. Yeah,
they're using steroids. At one point, like, they go to this guy, and I'm looking at him, going, he looks familiar, and I realize that he used to work on Battledome, which is a show I worked on a really long time ago.
That's funny.
And like, he's like a fitness magazine model. Mm-hmm. So of course he's jacked up on steroids. And you know, there's this one guy. He has two brothers, and they're both on steroids. One of them's like a power lifter. That's what he does. Like, and he goes to competitions and things. And his wife, like, wants him on the steroids and then wants to take him off. And it's just this sort of, it's really personal, but
what
it also looks like a larger
issue.
What was
the point of view? Was it?
Didn't really have one.
It wasn't pro or anti?
It was talking about the different points of view from it. And at the end, I don't think that the filmmaker had decided what was the best idea. Yeah. And so he couldn't really wrap it up.
What did you think?
I don't know. It's
good.
I mean, I can see it
both
Josh ways.
Josh is looking bigger.
Like, if you want to see, I'm getting.
And he gets angry very quickly.
I'm getting cut. You know, but there was some. You know, there's like the one guy whose kid killed himself, and he says it was because of roid rage. And there's everybody else says that's ridiculous. You know, some people will go through the entire thing without it. Lyle Alcedo, you know, died a horrible death. You know, but there's people who use it who say that, you know, if you want to watch top level sports, this is what you'll have to deal with. You know, and what's so wrong with that? You know, it.
I gotta admit, it's been sad to watch all the baseball players that we thought were so great earlier this decade.
Suddenly
suck. Well, suddenly get really small and suck.
Well, that's the point. I mean, that's the point. Like, so what were you? How are you happier as watching baseball?
Now I'm happier now.
Yeah,
that's cleaner.
It's more realer. Yeah.
If you watch, if you watch this and at least hear those other points of views, I find it very interesting because previously, sure. I think I would have. I mean, I do think I stand on the just don't do it. You know,
just don't do it.
Yeah, but it really puts a lot of things into perspective, and it was very interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool. Very cool. Completely not related to steroids at all. Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist came out towards the end of the summer with Michael
Cera.
Yeah,
cool. That'd be really good for you.
Okay. This movie was right up my alley. It was, you know, kind of high school romance, you know, based around, you know, a night in New York City going to see a band. And it was very, It was very reminiscent and reminded me of my childhood. You know, like, again, like Milk, it was all shot in New York. There's a scene in Brooklyn that's on the way to your house.
Right.
Totally, you know, like, totally recognize the exit on the BQE. And, you know, like, it was a lot of fun. And Michael Cera, goodness, you know. It kind of fell a little short in my, like, kind of what I wanted out of it. The band stuff was kind of cheesy. You know who was great in it? It was Jay Baruchel.
Yes.
He played the girl, Kat Dennings' boyfriend.
Well, he was in the other one we're going to talk about, right?
Jay Baruchel was in he was in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, he was in Tropic Thunder.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
he's getting to be good.
He was undeclared originally.
Yeah,
But he played her boyfriend who was in an Israeli Jewish band, and he's trying to get her dad to sign the new label, and it was very funny. I don't know, the movie was great. It was just, and Michael Cera was doing his Michael Cera thing. Yeah, it was really good.
Gonna ride that train. Well, speaking of Jay Baruchel, Tropic Thunder was the last one we're going to talk about, and it. Everyone seems to think this is the best comedy of the year, and I don't know if that's true.
It was really good. I don't know if it was the best comedy.
This was a perfect example of one that I thought was very funny at the end and very funny at the beginning, and in the middle I was looking at my watch.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because Ben Stiller was in it. I think the standouts... I hate Ben Stiller. He was okay in this. That's fine.
So what were your standouts for?
Standouts are obviously you got to go with Robert Downey Jr., who was incredible, very funny, created a character I've never thought of before.
Right.
A man, like, he's Russell Crowe. I mean, but, you know,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what he is, but a guy who's living his life as black, and there's just so many jokes around that.
You see, everybody was talking about Tom Cruise's
turn.
I was about to say.
He was great, but for me, it was Matthew McConaughey.
I love Matthew McConaughey. He was very...
He was great.
He was so, and he sort of humble, like, he kept, like, bringing himself down.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate Tom Cruise, but yeah. I thought he was great.
Well, I didn't know it was him when it started.
Right.
See, what's funny is I knew he was in it,
right.
And I knew he was playing a part that was almost unrecognizable, and when I saw it, it took me two scenes to pick him out.
Same thing, yep.
Like, I knew it was coming, but still didn't catch it.
But so where did it falter, then?
I got bored in the middle.
Yeah, it was too long.
The story was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, like, all these great ideas, but, like, the whole time that they're, like, prisoners, and they're making him perform, I was just like...
Pineapple Express was another movie that suffered from that. That was initially, as a stoner comedy, it was really funny, but then it became an action movie, and became too long. It was a half an hour too long.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed, and I had some big belly laughs, but at the same time, I was just like, all right, you know.
Yeah. No, there was great stuff in it. I think it was some really good concepts. It wasn't necessarily a great story, but, you know, there's worse ways to spend a DVD rental.
So if Downey was Russell Crowe and Jack Black was Chris Farley, who was...
Ben Stiller.
See, I thought Ben Stiller was Tom Cruise, which I thought was interesting. Like, to me, I was like, he's Tom Cruise right there. And which made the Tom Cruise thing all the more, I don't want to say courageous.
I had a lot of respect for him because he was...
At this point, he's got to do it.
Plus, his role was out there. I mean, when it was him dancing.
Yeah.
I mean...
Right. No, he owned it. Like, he didn't half-ass it, and that's why I really appreciated it, you know?
The vulgarity and everything.
Yeah.
That movie hits you with vulgarity in the face from the get-go.
He was Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, he was Harvey Weinstein. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But he doesn't, like, Tom Cruise is big enough that he doesn't need Harvey Weinstein.
See, 10 years ago, we couldn't have said that. But now that Harvey Weinstein's got no power.
Yeah, you can't, because he wouldn't do it. So that was the year in movies. Saw a whole bunch of other ones, but these are the ones that really stood out for us. I don't know, I like going to
and we did special edition podcasts on all the comic book movies, so you can go back and listen to those.
Yep.
They all still hold up.
I've seen almost all of them again. They're all still good.
Yeah.
Let us.
I saw Iron Man last night. Actually, it holds up strong. Okay, sorry.
Let us continue to television.
Television.
TV. Television. The near and dear to my heart. The most comic book like of media.
The last year on this show, we talked about the emergence of Mad Men, and this was season two.
This is the year of Mad Men.
Now you're on board.
Oh, yeah, I'm on board. I haven't watched season two yet, but I watched season one.
Season two was interesting. Season two was very, I thought, different tonally from season one. Whereas one was almost a true ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Two was very much an exploration of Don Draper.
And Peggy. To a lesser extent. Yeah, I guess I can see that.
I really enjoyed it. I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just saying it was different in tone. Like, it shifted.
I found myself
missing the sort of office bantery stuff that was going on.
I think that they'd set everything up, and it was like, okay, now let's get moving with the story we're here to tell.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where sometimes I enjoy something so much that I lose the ability to criticize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that...
Oh, I love Mad Men. Believe me, there's...
No, I know, but, like, something hits a point where it clicks, and I go, I'm just enjoying this, and I'm along for the ride. And my critical faculties are no longer... available to me, you know? And if it's got problems, I don't really notice.
What's fascinating about Mad Men is with the emergence of the show, at least in critical popular, it's still not barely 2 million people watching.
Yeah.
is that the more we learn about John Hamm, the more you realize how brilliant he is as Don Draper.
I want to say, like, he was the best Saturday Night Live host I've seen in forever. And I only say that in comparison to the job that he does on Mad Men. Like, it makes it that much more apparent.
That's what's amazing. You see him, it'd be very funny on this one show, and then you go, and he's totally serious and very effective.
He owns you with a look. You know what I mean? Like, he just, it's amazing. This guy that, you know, no one had ever heard of 2 years ago.
And didn't Pete become somewhat sympathetic this season?
Was that my crazy? Middle of the road. No, he was still a dick. I mean, you know, if you're his wife, if you're Trudy, Pete's not sympathetic. Yeah, well, but Trudy's also awful. So.
Pete is the embodiment of the 50s man in the show still. I mean, they're in 1963 at this point. They skipped past the assassination, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still the 50s man in the 60s.
No, they're not past the. They're at it, I think.
Well, either way, they're not. I think
they're in the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes.
That was where we left off. So the assassination hasn't happened.
They're going to have to skip it because they can't. That'll dominate the show if they deal with that.
I think they said that. I think I've heard that interview.
But still one of my favorite shows of the year. Still one of the
crazy California episode.
Fantastic. Like, that was a fantastic episode.
It's just like a Viscount with a pencil thin mustache. It was just
Don
was
goes craziness. To California to try to get the space sales, you know, to rep the space companies, and ends up.
He just leaves.
He just walks out and ends up just meeting a girl at the pool, goes back with her and has an adventure with, like...
like her European royalty family. Like, it's just crazy. And, like, one of the things about the season was it was the big moves. Like, you know, like, Betty kicks him out.
Yeah.
And they stuck with it the whole time.
Oh, you know what was great? It was the whole takeover with Duck.
Duck.
I forgot about that. The guy that Don's always shitting on in the company engineers a hostile takeover of the ad agency, and it blows up in his face somewhat. Mm-hmm. Which was a great moment when he thinks
not under contract.
He thinks he's got Don under his thumb, and Don just says, "What the fuck? I'm Don Draper," and then he goes, "Oh, I'm never gonna."
Yeah, win. It really is like every episode was incredibly satisfying. Yep. That's the best you can say about it.
Great news that it's back, although Matt Wiener still hasn't signed it for it.
All right, let's change tone entirely. Apparently,
Da-na-na-na. So when the news broke last spring that they were working on a 90210 revival from the CW for the fall of 09 of 08, what was my initial reaction?
Oh.
No, especially when I saw the kind of package that was at the upfronts. But then they did something very, very clever.
Yeah, they brought you right in.
They brought Jenny Garth on board.
They brought in Jenny Garth and Shannon Doherty to a limited extent.
Exactly. They weren't doing anything.
When that first episode aired and I heard the new 21st century version of the theme song, I cringed. And when I saw the new characters come in, I cringed. I hate Rob Estes, the dad.
I love him.
I don't like him. And,
Are you watching this?
We'll get to that.
When Jenny Garth came on, it all felt okay. For some reason, I've tried to keep up with her career. No other role has she had that's been as good as Kelly Taylor. She's been on a bad sitcom, things like that. But when she's Kelly Taylor, it's like it's the role she was born to play.
I want to escape this room so badly.
Well, it's funny because I never really watched the first one. I watched a handful of episodes, but it was so all over the place. It was the zeitgeist, and I wanted to see it. And then I watched the first one, and I was like, oh, this wasn't that bad. And then I just put it on my DVR.
What's great is so I'm in California, you're in New York. I get texts like before I've watched it. Oh, that was crazy. That would never happen. Like commentary from Connor Maddie, he's watching it, which makes it even better. And the thing is, now as we're halfway through the season, it's not that bad.
It's
actually pretty good.
It's a solid CW drama
show, yeah. And it's picking up kind of where in the same vibe as the OC somewhat.
Most of the cast is pretty charming. They're good at their roles.
The girl who plays Silver is the one who I like the best. She's, you know, she's good, kind of sarcastic, of course. The sarcastic brunette, I mean, like right up my alley. But all in all, it hasn't been the train wreck that I thought it was going to be.
No, it certainly had a train wreck. Yeah. No.
And that sounds like something I want to spend my time on.
And they've balanced the fact that it's in continuity with the original series, but also in introducing new characters and new storylines, so it's not bogged down by it. You know, like they go to the new Peach Pit and there's Nat every now and then, but it's not like Nat. You know, like it's
well, the first couple shows were like that.
They eased us in, and then you see what they did was they eased me in, and then they
bait and switched you.
It wasn't a switch. It wasn't a switch. They baited me. That's what.
Well, because it kind of is because Shannon Doherty's not coming back after a while.
Honestly, she looked like a drag queen. Right. The less I saw Shannon Doherty, the better.
And Jenny Garth.
Jennifer looks fine.
She's not a regular. What I mean is, eventually she's going to go away. Right. She's going to be
Jason Priest is going to direct an episode this spring. We know that her baby is Dylan's baby. Like, it's all laid out for us. So, it's fine. It's a fun way to enjoy Tuesday evening.
We're all fine here. Josh?
Oh, sorry.
Now it's for Josh to get more superior.
I phased out completely. Sometimes a new show will come out, and I will watch the first episode, and I don't want to have to start watching a new show, so I will put up very high standards. And I'm like, I'm not watching this. I didn't really like the first time I watched 30 Rock, so I ignored it for a couple of years.
Years? No, it's only been on for three.
It's three seasons. I ignored the first two seasons.
You came on in the middle of last year, so you ignored it for about a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, either way, right. It's my favorite new show.
It's awesome.
My
favorite comedy. By
yeah, I've got to say it's starting to beat everything else that I was enjoying. Not that I have to rank things, but I don't know of a character outside of Arrested Development who's made me laugh more than Alec Baldwin.
Yep, Jack Donaghy.
More than Jack Donaghy. And I absolutely love the relationship between him and Liz Lemon, in that is this going to get romantic?
No, there's no romantic tension.
But it's affection. It's real affection. That actually feels real, but at the same time, it's really funny. But it's really funny just short of being absurd. Like, it's not quite absurd. Mm-hmm. There's a line.
I said this last year on Thursday nights at DVR, like 9 hours of TV, something super ridiculous. But 30 Rock is the first thing I watch, mm-hmm. always. I thought this season, the beginning, they got in a bit of a misstep in that they're trying so desperately to draw viewers in. And that the first three or four episodes were Jack, Liz, and the guest star. And you didn't see any of the other cast, really.
See, I said that too, but then I was looking at some of the older episodes, and they've had a lot of guest stars on this show.
Integrated them all with the cast.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, when they had David Schwimmer, he was with everybody in the cast. Right. Whereas this time it's been like, when Steve Martin came on, mm-hmm. he was just them three.
Yeah.
Like, they even did an interview with one of them. They were like, what was it like to work with Steve Martin? We never met him. Like, they never...
Right.
And... The best, I mean, they weren't bad. It was just a weird vibe because the rhythm was a bit off.
Yeah, I do feel like they're trying desperately to get viewers.
Jennifer Aniston, I thought, was really funny. I thought
she was very funny.
She was a good foil with Jack.
And I can talk about, I think, the end of the second season, because those all aired this year, too, where like Carrie Fisher was on one.
She was fantastic.
Just spectacular. There's literally so many funny things that has happened on it.
But after the first three or four, they've gone back to the ensemble.
Yep.
And it's been fantastic. It's been great. Yeah, it's my favorite comedy, easily.
Yeah, I'm really glad that...
It stays in the air with no viewers.
Yeah.
One big surprise. Yeah, like Arrested Development. One big surprise was HBO's True Blood. HBO's been floundering. HBO used to be the big name for drama, Sopranos,
they're losing, Deadwood. Losing share Bravo and AMC now.
They haven't had... They pass on Mad Men. You know, they haven't had good development. So True Blood is announced from the creators of Six Feet Under. It's a vampire show. I'm not overly a vampire fan, but I like the first four seasons of Six Feet Under a lot, so I checked it out, and I know Josh did as well. This is a rare show that got better every single week
mm-hmm.
to the very end.
At the beginning, the first episode, I was on the fence. I was like, I don't know if the first I episode keep
was,
watching
was,
this.
I don't think they got the tone in the first episode. They didn't balance the campy with the serious. Mm-hmm. And by the end?
Well, by the end, I was pretty wow. down with it. There was one thing is this: there was a lot of really interesting characters mm-hmm. and actors, which are sort of interchangeable. What's his name? The Sarsgaard, the guy who was in Generation Kill, yeah. mm-hmm. who played like the head vampire. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Like every time he shows up, I was like, and at first I was like, he looks ridiculous, but you get used to it. The girl who plays the best friend.
I don't know her name either, but she's great.
She's unlike anybody else on TV.
The setup for True Blood is it's a town in small town in Louisiana. There's vampires. There's werewolves. The main character, Anna Paquin, is a psychic or a telepath, and it's just sort of accepted. And vampires are open. People know they exist. They self-synthetic blood, so theoretically they don't have to eat people. And they're fighting for equal rights. They want to be able to get married. It's sort of an allegory. But then there's a whole big murder mystery. Somebody's killing all the women in the town. And the vampires may have fake blood, but they still like to kill people sometimes. The bad ones are still pretty evil.
Yeah.
And so it could be very, very, very bloody at times. Mm-hmm. Almost shockingly so for a television show. And very violent. And it's very sort of sexy. Lots of nudity and sex. But literally better every week. Better, just, you know, yeah, the tone gelled. The actors got better with the characters.
I think that's really the story of it, is that it, like every week I was like... At first, I was on the fence, and then I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. And then by the end, I was like, I'm really enjoying this.
And amazingly enough, according to what I've read, every week the viewership went up, which is
Well, they from the second issue, the second episode was when they announced that they had signed a second season, which was amazing because the ratings were ridiculously low for the first episode.
Yeah.
They were really low.
Well, because I think they realized that they needed to invest in it, and it's kind of thing like, look at Mad Men.
Well, I think
what's funny is when I did the Madman show, I kept writing Madman.
Yeah, but you know, Madman. I said this was the year of it because it's the second season. But this is when everybody noticed it.
Right.
You know, I
mean, not so. By everybody, you mean 140,000 people.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the audience is a drop in the bucket, just like 30 Rock. The audience is. I mean, it's not even the top 100.
Yeah. So a show on ABC, a rare show on ABC that premiered this year was Life on Mars, which is a American version of a British show. Now, I've never seen the British show.
Yeah.
Everyone I've spoke to who's seen it said it's fantastic and it's superior than the American one. I'm waiting till this one gets canceled and go back and watch the British.
Yeah, I am as well.
Because the thing is, I don't think the American version is that bad.
It's really fun.
It's really good. It takes place, so the idea is that it's a cop in 2008 who gets hit by a car, gets knocked out, wakes up in 1973. And he's himself, and he's got ID, and he's a cop, and he shows up, and he starts working in this new precinct that's run by Harvey Keitel, and Michael Imperioli is another
detective. Who's fantastic.
And yeah, and for me, what the show is a combination of watching every week Harvey Keitel and Michael Imperioli, which is fantastic, and then New York in the early 70s.
And I really like Jason Mara, too.
Yeah, well, I don't really
film
like
it here.
Yeah, they film it here.
Like, here. In this neighborhood.
Yeah, no,
a lot.
No, I know, they film it in New York City.
No, in, like, up the street, they've...
Right.
I've had to park on the other side of the road for the show a lot.
Yeah. I believe it.
Jerks.
And what's great is that the set dressing and the props and everything are great. Gretchen Mol, it's fantastic. And admittedly, it's very, as a New Yorker, I enjoy
it's it. Somewhat quantum leapy. It's somewhat.
A little science fictiony, a little, because the whole mystery is that why is he in 1973?
Is it time travel? Is he crazy? Is he dying? Is he in a coma?
He's in a coma in 2008, and for whatever reason.
Well, we don't know that, that's true.
Well, they keep on having these little flashes of Bush.
Except for the last episode, someone told him that he's being sent for this. I don't know what happened in the British show. I don't want to know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to know either.
And I don't know if they're following that or not.
Right.
But
nobody tell us either.
But so. It's not clear.
Yeah. But
he could be in a coma. He's probably in a coma. But again, they're sowing seeds of doubt.
Yeah, but that said, it's engaged me. And, you know, Harvey Keitel, Michael Imperioli on a weekly basis.
There's a lot of dialogue that Imperioli has that only Imperioli could pull off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I wanted to mention Saturday Night Live. And it's funny, Saturday Night Live has gotten a lot of play because of Tina Fey as Sarah Palin, which was all fine and well and good and everything. But I find it around it. I've been enjoying Saturday Night Live more this year than I have in a really long time. And I think that part of that is I just think it's a really strong cast of writers and people. Even Keenan is getting funny. I don't know how that happened. But anytime Will Forte does anything, I laugh. I think Andy Samberg is finding. I think Bill Hader is hilarious. I think Kristen Wiig is a standout at this point. Just a lot of really funny people on the show. And for a really long time, oddly enough, I think through Tina Fey's tenure as head writer, they had a real writing problem.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't know how to end sketches. They would find
a
gag.
Never had to end sketches, though.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it's been better. I mean, like, it used to be just every single time.
Saturday Night Live is a conundrum because every season the call goes out for the show to get killed.
Yeah.
Every season they say the show is not funny. Every season they say they don't know how to end this show.
And
they've been saying that for 20 years.
And then you always get the Saturday Live got funny again people, too, which is the thing. And, like, it's also because Saturday Night Live, for me at least, because I don't watch it.
And if you don't know if you're from America, Saturday Night Live is a late-night comedy sketch show on Saturday nights, which has been around since 1975.
And a bit of an institution.
And almost every major American comedian you can think of in movies has come from Saturday Night Live.
And I don't watch it on a weekly basis. If anything, I watch sketches on Hulu every now and then. That's really all I do. But for me, it's been defined by the whole digital short thing. And so it's interesting to see that the show has been, you know...
Well, the thing that I would say is over the past couple of years, those have been on, and those have been very funny.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm bringing it up is now, is the difference between now and before is that I TiVo it, and I usually watch it on Sunday morning, because I'm old. And I would fast-forward through it, and I'd go to certain parts, or I'd watch sketches for a little bit. I'd find myself fast-forwarding through many, many less sketches.
Yeah.
And we'd mentioned the John Hamm episode earlier.
Yep.
That was the best episode of that show that I've seen in such a long time. And I don't know, it's because I love Mad Men that much.
No, he was very funny, legitimately.
But everything he did, like the butts sketches were like, and he played Don Draper a couple of times, and
yep.
They were both different but really funny.
It was very good.
No, it's been fantastic.
I have it on my DVR as well. I'm usually doing something Saturday night, but I always watch it.
Right.
I wanted to talk about a show that is one of those summertime shows, Psych. There's a whole slate of shows on the USA Network that are summertime, like Monk, Psych, Burn Notice, in Plain Sight. And these are not shows that are, like, going to change your life. They're not shows that are make you re-examine the human condition. They're just really funny, and they're really charming, and they're usually mysteries that are not that hard to figure out. But you don't watch it for the mysteries. You watch it because this cast is very engaging. Psych co-stars Charlie from The West Wing, who, if you watch this show and then watch West Wing, it's completely different. Hmm. He is over-the-top, goofy, physical comedian psych, and that is not at all what Charlie is in The West Wing.
No.
So it's kind of a revelation to see he's got a huge amount of range, but of all those summertime light fairs, Psych is my favorite comedy. It makes me laugh. I think they're the two guys, the main stars are the two, James Roday and Charlie.
I know he's Charlie. That's the only name I can think of.
They are the best buddy comedy duo on television.
The show I discovered this year that is new to me, but not new to anybody else in the world, is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It's a great show.
It went to season 4 this year. I've been catching up on Hulu. And it is probably the funniest show I've seen in ages.
Very daring.
It's on FX on cable, and it's very, you know, they curse. They say dick, asshole, all this kind of shit. Stuff, you know. Danny DeVito is genius in it, mm-hmm. and it's just like there have been moments that I have been quoting and replaying and finding the clips online and laughing at work with friends and stuff like that over and over, like consistently. And so, you know, like
it is a show
such to the point that people avoid Ron's desk now. No. Hey, have you seen this? Yes, Ron, we saw the clip.
It is a show where anytime you think, wow, they're not going to go there, they go there.
Yeah.
And then they usually go further.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's great about it. And the fact that also a lot of the timing and the beats and stuff like that, like I just love how they follow the same formula, mm-hmm. you know, where the show begins and then it ends with the thing and then you get the title card. And there are these little 20-minute nuggets of hilarity.
And the performers are also the writers and the producers, so it's all very...
You can tell that they're all putting everything into it. And Charlie Day is my favorite. He is hysterical.
Nobody gets angrier, funnier than he does.
There was the one episode that from season 4 that got me the most, which I was in a hotel room at like 1:30 in the morning. I put it on when Charlie and Mac got jobs they needed insurance, and so they went and got jobs. And Charlie got a job in the mailroom at this big office, and he's just incompetent and not doing well. And then he goes crazy and devises this whole plot in his head that nobody actually works at the company. And it was just this great monologue that he did about Pepe Silvia and the mail, which like... For weeks, we were dying over it. It was just great.
It's a very strong comedy. Yeah,
really, really good.
Another show that not a lot of people have probably mentioned because it's on Showtime is Californication with David Duchovny. It's a show about a writer in Los Angeles who sort of got an off again, on again relationship with the mother of his child, who's what's her name? Natasha McElhone.
Yes.
Yeah, her. And this show is just remarkably enjoyable. I mean, I sort of started watching the first season just because I was like, well, I'll check this out. And I found it's not great, you know what I mean? But, like, there's something about it. It's got this charm, and it's one of those things where, like, Duchovny is so good.
It's hard to not like Duchovny.
Yeah, I've always liked Duchovny.
He's... And you know, like, he was good in the TV set. Like, he's really good. He's a completely different character in this, and it's really sexy, but it's also funny. It'll get a little goofy, but it's... There's a lot of really funny standout characters in this. This season, the second season that's going on right now, the guy who plays Leoben, the Cylon,
yes,
plays a guy named Lou Ashby, who is a music producer. He's like a Rick Rubin, kind of like a mogul. He's done every album and everything. He's so good. I mean, like, and it's a completely different character. I really dig the show.
Well, it's a Showtime show that one of the shows that's helping the luster off of HBO.
Oh yeah, this and Weeds, the two things. You know, they're both great shows. It's been one of my favorite discoveries. The guy who played the bald dude from Sex and the City.
Yep.
Yeah, he's in this as
Evan Handler.
Yeah, he's the agent. And he's hilarious.
Showtime's been between this, Weeds, and Dexter. Everybody loves Dexter.
Yeah. I've seen all those. Dexter would be at the bottom of that list.
Like it. I mean,
no, I know. I'm just
the thing is, HBO doesn't have shows that anybody talks about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no.
Beyond True Blood this year, they don't.
No, Californication. You know, like it's like they're like 12 episode seasons. The first set of DVDs for the first season is relatively cheap, or you get them off. It's two discs on Netflix. Seriously, check the show out. It's a ton of fun. Not if you're sensitive to the graphicness.
Isn't he a sex addict playing a sex addict? Isn't that what the
show is? Oh, yeah.
That's real life.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Entourage, but people... I don't like Entourage, but people...
This is better than Entourage.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying...
I feel like Entourage is a forced buzz.
Yeah.
Like, they're really... Because they've got nothing else. I wanted to talk about Oz. No, this is not the show from 1996. Burn Notice is another one of those summer shows, but the reason why I love Burn Notice is a show about a CIA agent that was fired, which is what they're called burnt. They're burned by the CIA, and they're just dumped on... This show is fantastic simply because Bruce Campbell plays a boozy ex-CIA agent. And he is hilarious every week. He is the perfect...
Really good things about him and the show.
The show is great because it's a throwback to like those 80s action shows where it's just... I mean, it's not self-referential. It's not ironic. It's just an action show. And and the main guy's CIA agent.
It's on USA, right?
It's on USA. Yeah. But Bruce Campbell is his sidekick. And he's just always drunk, always looking for a lady. He's wearing a loud shirt because they're in Miami. It's always open. Yeah. And he's also super competent because he's a CIA agent. So he has found his niche. He's like, this is like tailor made role for Bruce Campbell, and he's just.
Does he ever get anything that's not tailor made?
No,
I mean it's not like he's like, oh, I'm getting out of my comfort zone this time.
No. But every joke he has, he just nails, and he is just hilarious.
Cool. So this is the last season of
La 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 La.
This is the last season of ER, and
can't believe they killed Doug Ross. It was so sad.
And I don't think I'm gonna make it. Already, we're about halfway through, and there have already like at least three. Or four
I've times. Broken down three or four times.
Yeah, it's been because what they're doing is that they're progressing the current cast stories well.
Yep.
I mean, but then they're
signing off people.
They're signing people off or having people come back, and there was an episode that flashed that explained Angela Bassett has come on as the new head of the ER. And they did a flashback episode explaining her relationship with the ER, and it goes back to when Mark Green was alive. And so we got Mark Green again, and it was just like, oh, you're killing me. It's like don't.
And it was Mark Green while he was sick.
Yeah. It was
And not only Mark Green, but we had a couple of side characters that have left since in that episode as well. So it was kind of like four people came back at once.
It was November.
Romano was in it, and Jerry was in it,
has Dr. Dave come back yet?
No, not Dr. Dave.
Good.
But they've had a bunch of. I mean, there's just been a bunch of emotional
times. Josh
and
I were talking. They're gonna bring back Randy.
Yes.
They're gonna bring back Randy. I'll
be Randy would only show up once every two seasons anyway. Like she's never been gone.
But and stuff that's happened to the current cast, which I don't want to ruin for Josh, so we won't. The beginning of the season was rip your heart out.
This is the one show where you'll because again Thursday night I've got so much TV I'm watching till 3 a.m. You'll find me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Sniffling on my couch.
I can't. I have a hard time imagining a life without ER. Yeah. It's gonna be tough after this year. Yeah.
So it's been such a good run it's an amazing run.
I've been there since season 2.
I want to briefly pop over to the other side of the pond. I hate that phrase. I want to talk about Peep Show, which is a show that airs in the UK.
That's still going on?
Yeah, yeah. In May there was a fifth series that played, and you can't get it here, so
it's too risque.
Figure that one out. I think they aired some of them on BBC UK or BBC America, but they edited the hell out of them.
Exactly, it's too risque.
And they released the first series, which is 6 episodes on DVD, but that was a long time ago. And I think they're like $10 for those, which makes me think that they're not going to do anymore. So I say get it any way you can.
nudge, nudge.
Well, this is like one of the funniest shows that I've ever seen, and it's about these. I love this show because it's so. What it is it's these two guys. It's the odd couple. There's the button down Nebushi dude, and then there's the guy who wants to be a
Michelin
musician.
Webb, right?
Yeah, it's Michelin. David Michelin, Robert Webb, or is that reversed? I don't remember. And you see it from their point of view, basically. All the camera shots are from the eyes of one of those two characters for the most part. And you also hear their inner monologue all the time. And, like, the characters just basically end up saying all of the horrible things that you think all the time but you don't say out loud. You know, just whatever your first instinct is, whatever your most selfish base instinct of something is. Like, they'll present something to Jeremy, like the guy's mother will be hitting on him. And he'll be like, am I gonna do this? Yeah, I am. Well, it's going to be all right. And that's, basically the first part of the whole show was Mark had been chasing this girl and then he gets married to her and then, like, it doesn't work out at the end. So this is this fifth season series is him being back single again. And so the whole he keeps meeting girls and falling deeply in love with all of them immediately. And it goes really badly. The show is incredibly crass, but really, 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 really funny. It's one of my favorites. I'm upset that like nobody sees it. So I can't share it with anybody. Love it. That's all.
We had two high profile endings this season. Two shows went off the air. First was The Shield. We're gonna talk about the second one in a bit. The Shield ended its seventh season. Or was it eighth season?
They did like those half season things. Yeah. So it's hard to count. It's been a while. Seven.
This was an extremely satisfying ending.
Yes.
Basically, you had... The Shield has been a show about corrupt cops in Los Angeles. Killing people, stealing, whatever it took to make money, and who were still trying to fight crime at the same time. They weren't totally evil, but they were...
Yes.
I mean, they were still protecting the streets, but also taking their taste.
You get a little taste.
And so Michael Chiklis was the star. He won an Emmy for his portrayal of Vic Mackey.
The first season. After that, apparently, the Academy forgot they existed.
Yeah. Like every other good show on TV. The Wire, Oz, Deadwood.
Wow.
This was just... it's been a harrowing journey. It was an extremely tense season, and it ended very... unexpectedly, but also satisfying.
The season as a whole, if the first chunk of them, I wasn't loving. But once they got up to speed, and I figured out where they were going, and maybe that was it. For a while, it felt like they were just running the motions of these characters, like they just sort of run through a scene and be like, oh, I gotta go somewhere else, and then they go. But by the end, they knocked you on your ass. Yeah. I mean, there was no other way to put it. The acting that Michael Chiklis did in the last two episodes
was incredible.
It was incredible.
The debate for the whole show has been, is Vic Mackey a bad guy? Like, is, because people would fall yep. for him because he was so charming.
Yes.
And he was a bad guy, but you'd forget that. But then in the last two episodes, oh yeah, he's a fucking bad guy. Like they reaffirmed it. They really shoved it down your throat. That mm-hmm. This guy does not deserve redemption.
No. You know, besides him, I thought, I don't remember the actor's name, but Ronnie, mm-hmm. This is a guy who started off as an extra, basically, extra.
He was a non-speaking extra.
He became... His character became the most competent of all the police on the show.
Started as a non-speaking extra, became a full-time cast member by mm-hmm. the end, and very important. He was Sean Ryan's best friend.
Right, and...
He was only an extra because they needed somebody, and he said, well, yeah. you're my friend, you'd be an extra on the show, and became a full... He was good by the end.
He was fantastic by the end, and his character...
He's the one that got screwed the most.
His character got completely fucked, and that's amazing. I thought Dutch... All those stories are really interesting. I like that... they never finished Julian's story, which is one of the things that always bugged me, but I read about the reasons for that. And I get it, and it makes sense, but they gave you a little nod to it, you know, and they said, this isn't over for these people, it's just, you gotta move on with the story.
And they found a way to punish Vic Mackey that was so unexpected.
Yep, it was totally unexpected, and really, like, I was like, that's really satisfying, that works for me. I was very happy with the end. And I think what it was is that the last couple seasons, so many times at the end of the episode, you'd stand up and go, ah!
Yeah.
And this beginning of the season, I wasn't feeling like that, but by the end, I was doing that again.
Yep, yep, yep.
Like, where you literally scream out loud at the television for what has just happened. that was fantastic.
But this is one of the great shows, so, I mean.
Yep.
So one of the shows that Connor and I continue to watch that probably should end soon is Smallville.
What are you on, the 19th season now?
No, it's eight season.
And
basically, it's continuing the inching towards his destiny as Superman.
Yeah, that's debatable. And we have that debate on iFanboy every week.
This year, if you look at it from a high level, this year he took the job.
What I mean is there's a debate whether or not he could possibly even be Superman, because at this point, he's running around in his civilian clothes all the time, fighting crime.
Exactly.
Everyone has seen his face, knows what he does. Yeah. as the director, Tad Stones, who comes to our website, says, at this point he can't be Superman, because if he put the suit on, everybody would know who he was.
They'll know it's that guy.
Then he's 35.
Well,
that's the other problem. He's our age.
And then what was funny is that for years I've been calling for the death of Chloe, and as opposed to getting a death, we get a mind wipe, and she forgets that he has powers.
This season's been interesting because... This was the season. At the end of last season, they lost the executive producer creators of the show, and they lost the best actor and the best character in Lex Luthor. Michael Rosenbaum was the actor, and he left the show. So everyone assumed, oh, they're screwed. I thought creatively, it's been a resurgence because they haven't been relying on the whole Lex dynamic. They've been able to explore more things, and apparently, ratings wise, the numbers have gone up.
Really?
So
it's not awful. It's not, and the thing is, I enjoy watching it.
And they actually pulled off Doomsday, which
they did. But I got to give them credit for that. And it was funny because I was talking to my friend, and he'd see it. He's like, "No, they pulled off Doomsday." I'm like, "No." And I watched it. I'm like, "Crap, they really did." Like, he even looked like Doomsday, and it was fine. It was like really good.
I don't understand. It literally does not compute.
So I don't know. I mean, I do enjoy watching it, and part of it is the cringing and the screaming at the TV, and I can't believe they did that. And that's all part of it.
And you've been there all along.
And I love Green Arrow.
It's amazing to watch a show where regular characters include Oliver Queen and John Jones, the Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, exactly. On a regular basis.
The funny thing is, though, that I just read recently is that the big bombshell is that Tom Welling is not under contract for next year and is saying he doesn't want to be Clark Kent anymore.
Ooh.
But they want to continue the show because the ratings, the numbers are up. So
it's going to be all that Jimmy Olsen.
It's not even in Smallville anymore. So they're in Metropolis. Yeah, it's time for the show to end.
Yeah, it really is. I enjoy it, but it's time for it.
One show that ended that I didn't want to end, but ended fantastically.
It was fine for it to end. The Wire, the best television program in the history of television. I don't know if that's true, but at least in my time. It had its truncated fifth season this year.
Which hurt a little bit.
It did hurt. They had to squeeze 13 episodes of stuff into 10 episodes of space, and you really felt it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And long before I was talking about stuff that I enjoy so much that I don't notice the problems, I did notice the problems of this in the beginning. There was a lot of – the first few episodes were really rushed, and the main storyline for Jimmy McNulty, it was a little out there.
Yes, but I thought it fit.
It made sense, and
he's
I can
been
justify
so self-destructive
it.
Self-destructive that this was the logical extension
yes.
of that.
It was so far gone, though, that I was like, "Wow, that's really." To me, the most interesting parts of this were the newspaper stuff.
Mm.
Clark Johnson, who played a character this year, who's normally a director but has also been on a Homicide. His character was fantastic. Yep. You know, it's just like the culmination of everything. The last episode was fantastic. It was heartbreaking.
Most series don't end that well, and that was a great, great ending.
Yeah. You know, Marlowe, great, great, great villain.
He was the guy. He was the Heroes, the fear guy on Heroes.
Yeah, and he's a guy who, like, you get the sense, like, he's never going to get a role like this again.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, most of the people on the show are never going to get roles like
this. No, which is the Oz thing that we've seen, you know? You finish up Oz, and then, you know, it's just all horrible. And
it's just all back to being Thug Number 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is too bad because they actually got to play roles in there. But
you know, it's
The
just
Wire
like,
is great.
The Wire is just everything. It was a novel, and it was a novel that was done by people who really, really, really cared because they knew that only a few people were watching it, but those people were really into it, and they just everybody cared what they were doing. And that's just horrible that it's over, but it has to be over, and I'm cool with that. I was utterly satisfied by the ending of this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great so, final, like 15 minutes.
Oh man, just ugh.
Good stuff.
So the year in TV continues to be the medium that we enjoy probably the most, I think.
On a regular basis.
A lot of TV.
Yeah.
So this is a good time as any to tell you about our sponsor, InStockTrades.com. If you are going online to purchase your comic book trade paperbacks and graphic novels and hardcovers, InStockTrades.com is the place to go. They've got a tremendous selection, between 30 and 50% off on most titles. You can check it out at InStockTrades.com. Pretty much anything you want, they've got. So go to InStockTrades.com for all of your comic needs.
Free shipping with orders over $50.
Hey, that's especially with those big hardcovers. That's a good thing to have. All right, cool.
Well, we don't just like television and film. We also like the internet.
Yay, internet.
Yay, who doesn't like internet?
I hate the internet. Wait, no, I don't. I love it.
So this year, the funny thing, we said this last year, the funny thing when you do more and more of your own content is you get less and less time to watch other people's content.
Yeah.
So I think our viewership is down and listenership
on
podcasts.
That also has been, it's been interesting as the whole podcasting world develops. Like there's a lot of stuff in 05 and 06 and all sorts of stuff, and now it's kind of, you know, dropping off and you're seeing the kind of the real...
The people who are actually sticking with it. And
yeah, exactly.
So what did we like?
My favorite new podcast, audio podcast from the UK, Times Online newspaper, sponsored The Bugle with John Oliver from The Daily Show and Andy Saltzman, who's a British comedian. Basically, it's a weekly podcast, comes out on Fridays, and they make fun of the news. It's not all that unusual, but John Oliver, I mean, that guy has just got a beautiful way with words, and when he's making fun of things, all through the presidential election, it was, you know, it was just fantastic.
Is it a limited run? Is it, you know?
No, they've done over 50, so they're going for over a year now. Yeah. I discovered it not too long ago. Ryan from Santa Cruz turned me on to it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Who's it associated with? Is it
Times Online?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, if you like smart political humor, if you like British comedy, if you know news, current event stuff, every Friday it's about a half an hour long, so it's not a ton of stuff. It's great. It's my favorite new podcast by far.
Cool. So the world of internet video, the biggest surprise probably came this summer when we got word of the fact that that Joss Whedon had a project that he had worked on over the strike.
During the TV writer strike.
During the TV writer strike that was called Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. And it featured Neil Patrick Harris and Nathan Fillion from from Serenity. Firefly and Serenity and Felicia Day from the Guild video podcast, and it was a three-part event that ended up being about 45 minutes total, and it was a musical tale of a supervillain named Dr. Marvel, and it was probably one of the most creative, funny, amusing things I've seen in ages, and it was... It was great. You know, like, obviously they had people behind them help. They shot it on backlots in Hollywood and with that kind of level of talent that was there. But Joss Whedon and his brother and his friends wrote all these songs and they produced all these musical numbers and it was freaking hysterical.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it was really... It was the best thing of this year in terms of internet video. It was really, really good.
I tried to watch and then a bunch of people started singing.
Yeah. This year, my favorite new podcast, it's just not new but new for me, was Tom Versus... which was Tom versus the JLA and became Tom versus the Flash, which is Tom Cater's from Around Comics, basically recounting each issue of JLA and the new issue of the original Barry Allen Flash books. Very, very funny.
If you listen to one podcast, you should be listening to Tom versus the Flash on a consistent basis, every couple of days.
Well, after I fanboy, then...
Wait, you don't even listen to us, listen to it.
I've been behind, so I just recently got to the Flash segment. I just finished the JLA segment, and it's just... He makes fun of, but loves unconditionally these old Bronze Age books, which is
great. Yeah, it's a fine line. Like, it's one thing to be making fun of it, like, see how stupid this is? It's not that. It's like this affection.
He's not reveling in it. It's not like, he's not doing it to bash the books. He's doing it because he loves them.
What's funny is he's looking at it with a modern eye, with a modern sensibility. So it's like, there's a lot of the stuff in The Flash that has to do with Barry Allen's relationship with Iris.
Which is awful.
And just social conventions and how it's changed.
Yeah, the 60s and things like that. And a lot of the Justice League stuff, which he finished up earlier, when he got to the Justice League Detroit
it was
stuff,
great.
That was hysterical. That was
I love the vibe.
Like, the
more
whole
vibe talk.
And when Aquaman was the leader and he would hide in the pool to sucker punch people, like, to train them, like, it was just like...
and the strings that you can go when you're going through them all this fast, like you sort of see all these really horrible patterns that are happening. And you know what? Sitting there talking by yourself to a microphone and being entertaining is really hard. And
yeah,
he's a good guy. Listen to his show.
Tom versus
the Flash.
Yeah, look for iTunes.
The best audio podcast that I started listening to this year is called You Look Nice Today. And it was actually born out of Twitter. The three guys that on Twitter, Scott Simpson, Merlin Mann, whose Twitter name is Hot Dogs Ladies, and Lonely Sandwich, who's Adam, I forget his last name. They're people who met on Twitter and found that they had a similar kind of humor, comedy style, and started just the kind of the elevator pitches that it's a diary of awkward kind of social awkwardness in life, and they just start talking. They go, "Hey, you ever do this?" Whatever, and it's just they're all three very witty guys, very funny guys, and it's just these conversations, and they just kind of riff off each other, and it's consistently makes me laugh when I'm on my commute on the public transportation, like out loud, and it's just hands down the funniest thing I've heard in at least the podcasting in a while, and some of the stuff they touch on is you know Scott's got some kids, you know, to have them, Scott and Merlin are both married. You know, and technology, John Hodgman came on the show, John Hodgman and Jonathan Coulton came on, so they brought in that whole level of wit, and it's just very, very witty, very, very funny, and, you know, not enough people are listening to You Look Nice Today, so check it out, because it is really, really funny.
What? How many is enough? Not enough listen, so... I can
five digits.
I can tell you one thing. Not enough people listen to this.
Sure, that's true. So those are some of the podcasts that we listen to that we enjoy. So check those out, Gavin, if you might find one you like.
You know what we're so into? Video games.
Really?
We're not.
It's not true at all.
I had a Nintendo Wii that sat in a closet all year because I don't have a TV.
It's interesting that you have a Nintendo Wii that's in a closet while you're in San Francisco.
Let's keep going back to that joke.
Josh?
It's an easy joke.
You got a new game. So we just played about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, it'd be kind of dumb not to want to play DC versus Mortal Kombat.
Well, yes and no.
Can you explain?
I like when the DC guys fight each other. I don't know so much care.
Apparently there are Mortal Kombat characters on there you can play with.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're on the left side of the TV. I can't tell you. Yeah, I got this. I've been playing around with it. It's a Mortal Kombat game. But
the problem with this game is that, like, I don't know all the combos and everything.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like I'll play the DC characters until I get tired and then I'm done.
Well, here's what I've learned. I'm old now. So what happens is, A, I don't have the patience to learn any combo moves. Like, you could look them up and do the thing.
There's even a little menu. You press a button, it shows you a menu. Yeah. And it's like, down, down, up, down, bar.
Yeah.
Oh, who's time for that shit?
Yeah, exactly.
And I also find my hands get tired very fast.
Yes.
Like, they totally, I'm like,
the little in between your thumb and your index finger cramp. Oh, I hate that.
I don't want to. But
I will say this, though. When we were playing...
It was fun.
We were laughing to the point of tears earlier. Yeah,
but
that's because Connor just kicks. Connor just crouches and kicks over and over. And apparently it's impossible to beat. I don't know how to get around that.
I don't like the fact they felt the need to tweak the costumes just for no good reason.
They always do, yeah.
This was actually written by the story mode, which I've played some of. It was written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. It's not necessarily good, though.
Yeah, but you liked one part with Flash and Batman, right?
Well, all right. Is it Flash? I forget. Somebody fought Batman.
It was Flash, I believe.
Was it Flash? Yeah, I think, right. And like, they get through the whole thing, and, I mean, if you're playing the story mode, you're the Flash, and you have to beat Batman. And like, at the very end of it, it's like, the character goes, because you beat him, and the character goes, aren't you supposed to be the master of hand-to-hand combat? And then Batman sort of stands up and goes, yes, and he punches you, and it goes to the next scene. So, like, even though you know there's no way that he would beat him, you know, it works like that.
It was really fun when you group of fans who
it's fun. It's probably fun to play with other people.
I don't think I'd play it solo. I'd only play it for you guys. I mean, that was really fun earlier. Yeah,
I played it solo for review purposes. Right. You see. And no one else comes over, so otherwise I'm just
sitting
there. You
played Catwoman solo.
Yeah, she has large boobs. That's all.
Rock Band. So ever heard of that game?
The one video game I've probably played the most this year was Rock Band, and then Rock Band 2. And again, it's kind of one of the things, like, I don't have a TV, I don't have an Xbox, but my friend does. And a whole bunch of us, probably about once a month or so, would go to his house and have basically a karaoke party, but with Rock Band. And it's
probably the ultimate party game.
Yeah, it's more fun, you know, than I would think if I'm sitting here going, yeah, a whole bunch of us, and we pretend to play guitar, pretend to play drums, and somebody sings. And some of the funniest shit that's happened has happened in the Rock Band night. So
yeah,
and Rock Band 2 just got even better. So.
Yeah, the game didn't change at all. No, really, no, I mean, yeah. The interface is a little bit better.
Just the more, like, when Rock Band 2 came out and there were Go-Go's on it, I was like, oh yes.
It's funny is that the songs that you want to play on it are so opposite of the ones that I want to play on it. Yeah. There's been some stinkers on this one, like songs that don't belong on the game. Like, there's a Sonic Youth song.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That it's a fine song.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind listening to it, but to play, it's really fun, the Bob Dylan song.
Yeah.
It's a fine song. I don't want to play it on this game. Yeah. You know what I mean? But
it's
at the same time,
15 minutes long.
There's all sorts of it is.
Green Grass and High Tides.
No, not that. Oh God, that's just hard.
Yeah.
I still haven't beat
Rock
that.
Rock Band is just so much fun, and it's been the one thing where singing, drums, guitar, doesn't matter. I'm having a great time doing it.
What's really interesting in looking at this list we've got here is all these games on our list are all group games.
Yeah, they are.
We are not really solo gamers.
Actually, here I have Grand Theft Auto 4, which I played and finished this year.
Yeah.
Which is fun. You know, it's a Grand Theft Auto game. I didn't love it. I think it was a really, really great technical experience. It was beautiful. The city was really neat. The gameplay was fantastic. But if you remember the old Grand Theft Autos, the old GTAs, they would have lots of celebrity voices and things like that that were interesting and made it more quirky. And I thought the soundtracks were... Now there's like 18 stations or something like that, and I don't know any of the music. Yeah. Whereas before, like, you know, when it was in the 80s, it was like all of these songs that were kind of funny and bad. Like, you'd be like, I'm listening to Air Supply and driving around. It seems to have lost some of that quirky personality and edge.
I feel like... I'm sure it's really still popular, but I feel like Grand Theft Auto's lost a lot of its buzz.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm sure it's still tons of games.
From a gaming standpoint, though, it's an excellent game, and I played all the way through. I didn't get bored. You know, I was actually interested in the story, but about halfway through, I was like, I want to know what happens.
But I feel like 8 years ago, all you heard about was Grand Theft Auto, and now it's all Rock Band. It may still be really popular, but the buzz is now on other games.
It's really interesting because when it comes to mainstream acceptance of games, it seems like the party game
is definitely
the thing you can play with lots of people. That's what people are paying attention to now. You know, among gamer circles, these, you know, Gears of War is a big deal.
It's popular because
we're not heavy gamers.
Well, Mario Kart Wii was the game I played by far the most, and I play it solo. And I actually just last week I was like, I needed a break. And I played for like 2 hours and unlocked all these levels I hadn't unlocked before. But it's Mario Kart Wii is so much fun as a group. I mean,
Mario Kart was just so great. There were Nintendo 64 and adding in the wireless factor.
And it's basically the same game.
Yeah, totally.
It's better graphics, better sort of usability, and you get the steering wheel now. And
Connor has a giant TV now.
And bikes. And actually, my sister was over the other day, and she and I played like 2 a.m. We were just laughing our heads off because it's so much fun. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
But in a fun way, and it's the game I by far played the most. Yeah. I love Mario Kart Wii.
It's a lot of fun.
I would kiss it if I could.
I suck at it.
You guys did some writing.
You only played it once though.
You guys played it a couple times. Some video game review.
Oh yeah, we one of our users, Will, has a blog, the Entertaining Grime, And Josh and I reviewed Mario Kart Wii. Josh reviewed Grand Theft Auto, and yep. we posted there. Go to our show notes. There'll be a link to the blog.
Cool. Just search Entertaining Grime.
Yeah, but go to our show notes, and we'll link it directly. But it was, you know, he said, "Do you want to write a review?" I've never written a video game review, so sure, I'll try that.
It took him 3 days.
Really?
I had to play it.
Is it did 400 words?
I did. I had to cut it down from 14,000 words. I got really verbose.
All right, so that's the world of video games. Obviously, apparently, we spend more time working than playing video games. We'd love to play more, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't play any other games. That's crazy.
All right, so let's dive into music. I have to give my album of the year or band of the year award to Los Campesinos. Los
Campesinos.
Los Lobos.
I'm looking at it. It's spelled right there.
They are a band from Wales. They're a British band from Cardiff, I believe.
They sound like they're from Venezuela.
I know. And they are remind me a little bit of Architecture in Helsinki when I first discovered them. That it was a you could tell there's a lot of people. There's a couple of girls. You know, like there's some horns going on, things like that. So much bottled energy in each one of these songs that it's just like you just can't keep your foot from tapping. You can't kind of like want to sing along and all that kind of stuff. I discovered they put out either a record at the end of 07 or the beginning of 08, and they just put out another record now.
They got so much energy, they got
to
get it out.
Exactly. And it's so much fun to listen to, and they're going to start touring the U.S. In 09.
You're going
to
go, aren't you?
Well, no, they're not playing in San Francisco. They're playing in New York on Valentine's Day.
Too bad for people who don't live in New York, sucker.
Rumors they're playing Coachella.
They're going to play here, and I don't even want to go. I'm not even going to...
You never go out.
I did, too.
It's on the list.
But they are... hands down, if Los Campesinos is playing in your town, go check it out. Los Campesinos. Anyway,
that still wasn't good.
Keep trying,
but
you'll hit it eventually.
So much fun.
It's such an ethnic word, these Brits.
And the songs are really poppy, but not in the kind of a bubblegum kind of way. More in like an indie pop kind of way, indie rock pop. And you know the guy girl singer kind of thing that goes on, and a lot of the lyrics are very are like you can plainly hear the lyrics, and they make you laugh, and it just fun.
Do they sing Jackson?
I got married in Jackson, all the way to...
Whenever I think of guy-girl duets, I always think of Johnny Cash.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to mention the Flight of the Conchords album, because for a while there was just an EP.
Yeah, and then, I have the EP. Is there full of...
Yeah, they just released a full album with all the songs from the TV show.
Son of a bitch.
Such as Voodoo Fafa. you know, like, this is a lot like Tenacious D for me, is that I became a big fan of it, and like at one point I was like, these songs are actually really catchy and they're stuck in my head and they're
really
entertaining
catchy.
And they're good, and actually like musically to be able to play in that many styles is really impressive to me.
Yep.
I just downloaded that whole album recently, and I've been listening to it off and on, like a real album.
The EP's on my iPhone. I listen to it all the time when I'm on the subway.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is the whole album, so because you needed one more version of Business Time.
Actually, I do. I can take as many versions of Business Time as you can give me.
Exactly.
That's a great song.
That's all. That's the whole album. You should get it. It's fun. I like the show. I'm looking.
Is all the Ladies of the World
back
on there?
Yes. All the Ladies of the World. The one that's in French, by the way, which is my favorite. The end, he's just listing groceries, which is to me was really funny because that's the exact same thing that I found funny about learning French. Like the word for beef is bœuf, and which I just found hilarious. And he was just going le bœuf.
I'm kind of worried about the second season, to be honest with you.
So, Mates of State is a band that I've been a fan of since like early 2000. It's a guy and a girl who are married. He plays drums, she plays keyboard, and they sing these really kind of poppy songs. The first record I love, the second and third record weren't so good, but then a couple years ago they had a better record. They came out with a new record this year that was back to form and was as what I remembered why I liked them. And it's actually the first time they have instruments other than just their drums and keyboards. They actually got some strings on it and things like that. Really, really good. It was a pleasant surprise that it was.
I've seen them live a couple of times.
Yeah,
it's,
I saw them live this year too.
It's really quite powerful.
Yeah, really, really powerful.
I mean, like it's like that voice is like.
Yeah, I love the way they play off each other, both stylistically and instrumentally. You know, like
it's like a lot of sound coming from not a lot of things.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's what was impressive to me. Yeah. I wanted to mention Vampire Weekend. I don't buy a lot of albums. I don't go after a lot of new music. I ended up with this. I think Ron was like, "You should listen
to
this."
Vampire Weekend.
It's like music made for Wes Anderson movies.
It is. It just doesn't sound like anything else, and I think that's what I found. And I didn't really like it at first, and then something must have come up on my shuffle a few times, and I was like, and I was like, "That's fun." And then just recently, I've noticed that it's showing up in movies a lot.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, they're going to be...
Well,
like,
they're the hip band right
they
now.
They were on a lot of CW shows last year.
Yeah.
Season.
They're Spoon this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
But it's a good album, and like, people talk about it a lot. It's the one with a lot of buzz on it, but there's a reason. It sounds really
it's
interesting.
Good.
It's really energetic. It's really peppy. It's not downbeat. No. It's good. I like it.
The Magnetic Fields came out with another record this year, and they're one of those bands that whenever they come out with a new record, you've got to stop and download and listen to it because they're just so epic and amazing. And I actually saw them live, which I'd never seen them before, and it was right when the record came out, so I got to hear some new songs and as well as the old songs that they played live. But the new record is called Distortion, and that's the theme. Like, every song has just a ton of distortion on it. and the last record was called I, and every song started with the letter I. You know, kind of very, almost very kind of, you know, nose in the air, arty kind of approach to indie music. But Stephen Merritt, the main songwriter, is just an amazing songwriter. And some of those songs are just really, really beautiful. And the way they layer it, the use of distortion and the use of, you know, sometimes acoustic guitar, sometimes, you know, a lot of, you know, strings, a lot of different kind of sounds come out of it. And just Magnetic Fields are unlike any other band out there. So we went to a couple of live shows collectively.
I believe the very first show that we all went to.
This year?
Ever? We've never all been at one show at the same time.
That's weird.
I've been to shows with Ron.
Yeah.
Ron has been to shows with Connor.
Yeah, good point.
We were all three there with Ryan from Marvel.
Yeah.
And we saw the Decembrists.
The day after Election Day.
Yeah, and if you know anything about them, they were big Obama supporters.
Yeah.
So they were into it. The crowd was very into it.
You know how good the show was? The show was so good that before the show, I wasn't really into them.
Yeah.
It kind of annoyed me.
Yeah.
After the show, I went to eMusic and I went download.
Awesome.
It was an incredible show.
They were fantastic.
And from the standpoint of, like, at the beginning of the show,
it was
kind of
dragged.
It was. They kind of weren't into it. And, like, it kept building and building and building. And it got to the end and it was just...
It was
like
a raucous party by the end.
I had not expected him to play the crowd as well as he did. The time when he picked up somebody's phone, called somebody else's phone, left his singing, his vocals on their voicemail, and then hung it up. And I was like, that's amazing.
He was really good with the crowd.
He was great with the crowd. And, like, the sing-alongs...
Well, yeah. I was going to say that the culmination of the whole thing was they did Mariner's Revenge song at the end, which is... It's a weird song.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Yeah. And it just, they all line up at the front of their stage with their handheld instruments, and like he had the crowd go do the thing, and it just built and built. It was faster and faster and faster and going. And like,
the crowd crouching down.
The only bad part about that, I was like, you can't come back after that. Like,
they did. Sons and Daughters was amazing.
It was still.
That's what I walked away from that show with, that in my head. That you know, bombs fade away, and then it ended. Then it merged into a Yes We Can chant.
Yeah.
You know, but it was the show was moving.
It was really good. The only other, they actually did release like sort of an EP, which was a bunch of songs that were released separately. They're really good.
Yeah.
It's not a full album, but they're all like Valerie Plame, New England, and that Raincoat song. I can't get out of my head.
Yeah,
I'm loving that little EP.
Yeah.
A lot.
The Decemberists are one of the best acts around.
There's a new album coming out in March.
So for me, the live musical moment of the year was in September. I went to the All Tomorrow's Party, which is a kind of smaller festival that's organized by people from England. This is the first one in New York. It was actually up at Kutcher's Resort, which is the place that Dirty Dancing is based on. And it was like indie summer camp, where all these people from all around the world, as well as a lot of New Yorkers, you know, with their tight jeans, went up to the Upstate New York.
Get your white belts. Your white belts over here.
Saw a ton of bands at this festival. Saw Shellac, saw La Savvy Fev, who blew everybody away. Saw the Meat Puppets, saw Dinosaur Jr., saw Bob Mould play Husker Du songs to a small, small crowd. It was just amazing. But it all culminated in the last band, and the band that why everybody was there for, was the first My Bloody Valentine show in America since 1991. They'd finally gotten back together. It's one of those things where we talked about, you know, like things you hear rumors of, and you're just like, no, it'll never happen. And I'm not normally for bands reuniting. But
you don't like it.
No, I don't like it at all. But My Bloody Valentine, probably in my top 10 records of the 1990s, is the album Loveless. It's more important than Nirvana's Nevermind. It's more important than so many other bands. If you listen to that record, then listen to all the music that came after it. They invented the noise pop, kind of, you know, very heavily distorted, kind of almost atmospheric kind of sound that so many bands now are playing off of. They don't even realize it. And the fact that now they're in their 40s, and they took the stage, and the tension was palpable. There were 3,000 people all in the same room. they're known for being really loud, and I didn't use earplugs because I wanted to say I lived through it. And these guys can attest to it. The next day, I normally have bad hearing. I couldn't hear anything. Honestly, there was like three or four times during the set where I felt that pinch inside my ear, and I was like, "Oh, that's not good." And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I had the opportunity to see them again in San Francisco, and I didn't because I was like, "That was
you're so not going to top it." Yeah,
yeah, it was so perfect. I don't want to change it. I had my My Bloody Valentine moment, and it was just amazing. It was totally, totally good. So, so that was definitely a once in a lifetime kind of thing.
That was music.
It was music, indeed.
Beautiful, beautiful music. And beautiful, beautiful movies can be found on Netflix, where you can get over 100,000 titles, and they have no late fees and free shipping both ways. They offer Blu-ray titles, and they got fast delivery. The majority of the shipments ship in one day after you put them in your queue. Plans start as low as $4.99 a month, and if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you can get a two-week free trial and all the gosh darn movies you want.
And don't forget that streaming.
Yep.
It's streaming.
Cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
Hey, let's talk about comics, huh?
Comic books.
Why don't we?
We don't do that enough.
Woo, comics. All right. This year, the much ballyhooed or bashed Brand New Day storyline has continued on, and I haven't had, consistently as much fun reading books.
They put out 30-some-odd issues this year on time, on schedule, and they were just classic Spider-Man stories. They were just exactly what you'd want from Spider-Man.
Most were good to great. I mean, I don't think there was a bad issue.
There were very few instances where it moved from mediocre to bad, I think. There were maybe a couple of moments where, like, oh, I like this writer a little better than that one. Yeah, exactly. But honestly, from a tone basis and what you want out of Spider-Man, it was dead on.
And the talent is incredibly high. Yeah. And coming into next year, we're going to have another 6-part John Romita Jr. story, so that's cool.
I mean, if you look at those 30 issues, you had artists like, I mean, say what you will about the idea of the brain trust and stuff like that. You've got, Zeb Wells, Dan Slott, Mark Guggenheim, Bob Gale, now Mark Waid, Joe Kelly, all these writers working on it. But we saw art from Steve McNiven, Phil Jimenez, John Romita Jr. I mean, like, huge names in comic industry working on one of the best characters.
Yeah, it was really strong. I mean, consistently strong. Two, 3 years worth of comics came out in this year from Spider-Man.
Which is amazing. So it's an amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That joke will never get old.
Way back in June, I did an episode of the video show where we talked to Alex Robinson about his book Too Cool to Be Forgotten, which was released, and I haven't heard anybody complain about it. This book for me was my favorite graphic novel of the year. It was fairly simple. It was basic. Kid falls asleep, ends up back in
Life on Mars.
back in high school. He's hypnotized, actually. And he goes back and he sort of discovers sort of things about, when you see things from a different perspective.
Well, as an older man, he's got the experience of an older man to look back in high school and realize that some stuff is stupid.
Yeah.
And you don't need to worry about it. And he sees other, things. And other stuff making bad choices.
It's other stuff he wasn't paying any attention to, and he discovers a lot about himself. It was really touching. It was really simple. It's a nice little graphic novel. You should be going and checking it out.
And very, very emotionally wrenching at the end.
Very much so.
One of the books I was most relieved that was good that came out was Terry Moore's Echo, which is the new series from Terry Moore, who is the creator behind Strangers of Paradise. And Echo, we talked about it a lot on the weekly video show. How do you follow that? How do you follow a book like,
Strangers of Paradise?
Yeah. And what he did was he's delivered every 6 weeks an issue on time, and we've got introduced to this great kind of science fictiony kind of tale of this girl who sees a military kind of test go wrong and gets this kind of metal alloy stuck to her chest, and it's given her some mysterious powers, and the whole kind of suspense and mystery around that, what's happened to her, government involvement, they're kind of on the run, a little kind of romance budding possibly. It's pretty much hits on every kind of tone that you'd want. And it just, and Terry Moore's art is better than ever, and just totally relieving that this was good, because if it was bad, I would.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. It's been getting better every issue. It's great.
Yeah.
Nightwing, I think, was the best Bat book. There's a lot of Bat books, a lot of good ones. Batman is good, Robin is good, but Nightwing from Peter Tomasi totally rejuvenated the character, made it one of my favorite books to read. So happy about that, because it's been a book toiling in mediocrity or worse for the last 5 years or so, and it's ending, and who knows what Peter DeMasi doesn't seem happy about it, so we wonder what that went down.
Seem the whole Batman RP pissed off a lot of the creators.
The story has nothing to do with whatever.
No, but the direction it's taking, I mean, because you had Chuck Dixon, and then you had now this, and so
he stormed out.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So whatever's going on is going to go on. But this year you had a great, you know, two trade run or however long it is you're going to get of really strong Nightwing stories. So if you're a fan of that, if you dropped out, as many people did after it got started getting bad, it's a book to check out.
Alexander Gresham and Riley Rossmo released a series called Proof. Didn't start this year.
Started 207, yeah.
But I discovered it this year, and most of the issues have come out this year, and this is one of my favorite new series. I just love the size of the world. I love that the book is unique. It doesn't sound like it should be because it sounds like such a high concept bitch.
Cryptozoology.
Cryptozoology. You know, there's the CIA agents, and one of them is Bigfoot. It sounds like it could be really dumb. But it's not. It's really, really good. Second trade just came out, so go out there and check out that book. It deserves to be looked at. It's that good.
One of my favorite creators, David Latham, came back with an ongoing series of Vertigo called The Young Liars, which has had its ups and downs. There's a pretty one really specific down with there's one issue that's a dream sequence that was just so far out there. But for the most part, I mean, I've been describing it as a rock and roll comic, and that, you know, it started right out of the gate, like with the speed and velocity of like Trainspotting, movie wise, and it's, you know, it's first full year, and
you just made me want to watch Trainspotting.
Oh, so good, yeah. But it's Dave Latham has this way of writing people and writing violence and writing, you know, kind of really fucked up kind of situations and things like that.
He can write fucked up things.
Yeah, it is. That it's the kind of thing where, you know, and it's a Vertigo title, so it kind of falls right into the Vertigo world and you know, in terms of what you would kind of expect, not the typical kind of comic book, not the typical kind of, you know, story that you would kind of encounter on. Definitely worth a shot if you're looking for something different. And, you know, like I said, it gets rough in parts, but, you know, the most recent issue came out, it reminded me of how great it was and how great it is, and why Dave Latham, in my mind, is one of the, you know, one of my favorite creators.
One of the big miracles of the year is in Action Comics and what Geoff Johns has been able to do to rejuvenate Superman in the eyes of many people who thought he was too hokey to be enjoyable. And
rejuvenation is your theme.
Well, it's true. A lot of these books have been brought back from the brink, and actually Superman is a character that's always perceived to be too hokey by the majority of the people who read comics, but Geoff Johns has turned it into something that has been a must-read book on iFanboy. It's one of the top-pulled books, which is pretty amazing considering. And, you know, again, unfortunately, same with Nightwing. It's getting going to go through changes. He's leaving the book to do a standalone series with Gary Frank about them redoing the origin of Superman.
However, Greg Rucka is taking it over.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
Interesting.
You know, here's the...
He's written Superman before, but it's not about Superman.
Here's the thing about Action Comics. I'm reading it.
Yes, and that's amazing.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk. It doesn't even make sense.
And not even just the new Krypton, which I've been enjoying, but before that with the Brainiac storyline, which is fantastic, and before that with the Legion of Superheroes storyline, it's been just an amazing run that he's had, which has only been since recently. I mean, he's been on the book for a long time, and Ron has read some of it when he was on the book, and it was okay. It was pretty good, but it wasn't great. But this year, particularly, for whatever reason, he found his stride as Superman, and Gary Frank really helped out with that feeling, and it's just an amazing book. So many Geoff Johns books could be in this list.
Which we'll get to.
But Action Comics is exemplary because it just doesn't, you know, it should be. I mean, it seems like Action Comics should be the first. But also wanted to mention, and we don't know when, how, if it will come back, but Powers ended its issue, 30th issue of this volume. And the last storyline this year was just epical. I mean, it was just...
Is epical a word?
Epochal. Sure.
Oh. They took from the 25th issue on, they took a more page count, kind of a bigger kind of approach to it.
Every issue was a tour de force.
Even though the delays, you don't mind the...
I don't care. Yeah. Because I kept getting... Yeah. I don't even remember how much it was delayed or what. But the last storyline was just so satisfying and so well done.
Great ending. It was a very satisfying ending.
You know, it was Bendis writing at his best. It was Oeming doing, you know, what he does best. Really, it's been a little while since we've sort of started to forget about it. But that whole last storyline was you know, great comics.
The thing about the delays, though, is normally when the comic's delayed, you get a regular size comic, you wait 3 months for 22 pages, but with Powers, it was double sized. You had a lot. You was so much packed in
there.
It was
meaty.
Didn't feel like you were really missing out.
It really did work better in that format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
more time to breathe.
So we'll see what happens next year with that title. So this year, Uncanny X-Men moved to San Francisco. And Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction successfully pulled that off. And despite the artistic stylings of Greg Land, and now we're kind of into the Terry Dodson kind of era, it was definitely the vibe and tone that I've wanted for the X-Men for a long time is finally seen to be coming back.
Who moved first, you or them?
I did. They followed me.
That's amazing.
I can't shake them.
I don't know how that works out.
Well, what happened was that Ed Brubaker looked up and he's like, "Where's that Ron guy?" Oh, wait, I got an idea.
So I don't know. It feels like the way the X-Men should feel, and I'm excited for next year to see how Fraction takes it, if he keeps in that direction or if he makes it weird.
Makes him weird. How could it be any more weird?
Tell us where the X-Men touched you.
Show us on the doll.
Hey, Geoff Johns is back. Justice Society of America.
Oh, so good.
Such a good book. Even though this has been one long storyline for this year, for the most part, it's been a really great storyline. It's, you know, Justice Society of America we say this all the time, it's a book that shouldn't probably work on paper, but it does because Geoff Johns has a great handle on these characters and the feeling of the
all 300 of them.
The reverential feeling for these old Golden Age stalwarts who exist in a modern world, and he's leaving this book as well. So this is three of my picks. The first, I just noticed that now, but the first three picks are all from people who are leaving their books.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
That's awesome. Next year's going to be great. Woo! I'm pretty sure my final pick's okay, but other than that, I'm
I wanted very miserable. To bring up Fables.
Yeah, your final pick is fine.
I wanted to bring up Fables because...
You seem thrilled about it.
No, I'm just waiting for the inevitable bullshit from these two.
What are you talking about?
He's rolling their eyes. They're rolling their eyes. No.
They're not rolling their eyes.
Not now. Ron's trying not to. He's holding his face steady. No,
we haven't bashed Fables in at least a year.
We have, yeah. We've respected your opinions.
We deserve some more credit for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever.
Persecution complex.
Exactly.
We were in this room 2 years ago. Anyway.
Two years ago. Get over it.
This was the end of the war. The first...
the big story ended, right?
The whole... This was going to be the end of the series, but he decided to keep it going. Again, that last storyline, the run-up to the war. And the one before it, actually.
They
fought
Gargamel?
Yeah, Gargamel. The adversary. Yeah.
awesome if it was Gargamel.
Here we go.
No.
There it is.
The Smurfs joke, not the Fables. I just like Gargamel.
The ending of the war was fantastic, and the storyline before that, the Good Prince, was fantastic. Like, every single one of those issues was pick of the week worthy. We've just started the new...
How do you feel about it continuing?
I don't mind it.
Because you know he wanted to end it at this point, and now he's continuing for whatever reason.
The thing is, if he's got more ideas and he's still got the energy to go through with it, then you know, do that. It isn't gonna make those stories any worse, I guess.
Right.
We're not far enough into the new things that are happening for me to be able to tell you how good it is. The issues have been entertaining. They've been good. There's lots more characters and things that he could spend time with and explore that I would be totally fine with. I want to see what happens to Snow White and Bigby and their kids. I want to, you know, that's all really interesting to me. But the end of that first 75 issues was very, very good. It was everything it should have been.
I don't think if you had turned the clock back a year from now and told me that there would be a Captain Britain book that all three of us were reading and enjoying and looking forward to,
with Blade,
I would kick you in the balls and then say, don't screw with me like that. But sure enough, Paul Cornell delivered a new ongoing Captain America in the MI-13, which is probably one of the year's biggest surprises and one of the best books Marvel's putting out right now. And I'm just in total shock and glee that one of my favorite characters is being used in a way, along with Pete Wisdom, the Black Knight, Blade. I mean, just like it shouldn't make sense. It shouldn't be as good as it is, but it is, and I'm thankful for that. So that's you know,
Captain. He has the right sensibility for that. Yeah, it's funny totally. And exciting at the same time.
Totally.
One book that I read solely in trades. So I only read it once this year, but it was eight issues worth all at once, and it was freaky. Was Walking Dead, which is still continuing to be one of my favorite books. I read this latest trade 2 a.m.
I put it down.
I thought, what the hell is wrong with Robert Kirkman?
I remember that.
And now I got to go watch like something wholesome before I go to bed. Otherwise, it's going to be problematic.
Give me Frank Capra, quick.
And he continues to portray a compelling world. He continues to find new things to do to these people to make you think, wow, it can't get any worse.
Yeah.
And then it does.
Yeah, and I mean, he's
Josh is reading an issue, so he's further ahead.
I switched on issues right after that trade because I was like, I need to know what happens next. Yeah, you're not wrong, and the issues keep it up. They've all been on time. They've all been coming out. You know, you could almost say the same about Invincible. Just Robert Kirkman's. He had that whole thing where people, you know, like he had his manifesto and took a lot of shit for it. But in the meantime, he never stopped making great comic books.
Yep.
I just love Walking. They might be one of my favorite books.
Totally.
I think my standout series where every single thing
this is
was
my
great.
Favorite book. I think.
This is, I think, my favorite book of the year. Every single issue that came out was great and fresh and new was Scalped. That series, you know. I didn't read it at first.
It's similar in a way to Walking Dead in that it's constantly finding ways to make bad things happen to these people, but it is more realistic, obviously.
Well, it's more realistic, and it's actually it's almost more character based.
Oh, totally.
Whereas they will really it's flashback. He's spending a lot of time on these main characters.
He's flushing them out like crazy,
I love that. There's no good guys and no bad guys, and everybody's a little dirty, but also everybody's got a little something redeeming about them. It's, everyone. I can't recommend the series higher. I enjoy it as much or more than any other book that I'm reading. I'm glad it exists, and I hope that he gets to keep going as long as he wants to. Jason Aaron, the writer. Scalped.
Cool. And the one book that came out this year that it was a surprise, was Glamour Puss by Dave Sim.
Did it come out this year?
It came out this year. Yeah, it started this year.
One time?
No, it came out. There are four issues. We have four issues so far. It is from a comic book purist, process junkie kind of love of comics and art, comics art. It is a must read. It is Dave Sim breaking down the artistic style of Alex Raymond and all the other kind of, Milton Caniff, all these other fantastic artists that we don't really talk about as much because they didn't do superhero work. They did, things like Terry and the Pirates. They did, other stories that, I don't have in front of me.
They're Golden Age artists.
Separate from Golden Age. I mean, not non-superhero stuff. We're talking newspaper strips.
But I mean,
and,
still, they're not like, it's if they were doing superhero, can you tell me who was drawing Batman in 19,
Right. Well, Bob Kane.
Not for a while.
Just kidding. I'm kidding. But this exploration of the way their art style was and the way that how they got stuff done the way they did by using cross hatching and shadows and things like that. It's just from a pure comic art kind of exploration. It has been eye opening and kind of just so compelling to the point where when a new issue comes out, I can't wait to read it, which is always kind of my gauge of it.
Is it?
There's no narrative. There's no like story to it. It's told in the first person of him trying to tell his exploration of, and in this panel he used this kind of pen and look how he did this, and Dave Sim's trying to teach himself how to draw in that style, and it's just fascinating to be along for that ride. So
is it an ongoing series?
Yeah, it's an ongoing series. So independent comic, and admittedly Dave Sim gets a lot of shit for Cerebus and his opinions that came out, and none of that is in here. Although on the offset, the way it's pitched is drawing fashion models in the Alex Raymond style is a little weird. But what he's using is he's looking at these old 60s magazines and redrawing the ads in these styles as a process. And it's just been fascinating. So. It's one of those things that you can only do in comics. Kind of, when it's collected, I think it's going to be up there with not understanding comics, but a lot of those kind of admittedly, if you're not interested in how comics are made, then it's not up your alley at all. Right. But if you're interested in art at all, it totally is. So,
I'd say two things. I'm surprised. One, I'm surprised Nova's not on this list.
Nova's great. Nova should be on this list. That's a good point.
I mean,
yeah.
It's unfortunate we had to pick five.
And I'm surprised Savage Dragon's not on this list.
Let's see if it sticks through. Savage Dragon has been great, but recently, the past 3 months.
Okay. Yeah, me leaving off Nova and leaving off Invincible were two tough calls.
Yeah. So.
It's just surprising.
That's all. So, in each year at this point, we try to narrow down a couple of folks who need special recognition.
Our two best people working in comics.
Two best people working in comics. For me, it was without pause or without question that it was Geoff Johns.
For the second year in a row.
For the second year in a row, purely because I cannot think of a book where you're like, every book, every issue.
Action, Justice Society, Green Lantern, even Booster Gold.
The volume of work that this guy did in the past year has been, amazing.
Plus a bunch of one-shot specials from Justice Society and...
Just a machine.
Rogue's Revenge.
Oh, yeah, totally. It was just a machine.
Everything was gold this year.
He's great. And it looks like hopefully next year will be just as good with Flash.
Well, next year he's moving off of Justice Society, moving off of Action. He's doing the Flash Rebirth. Rebirth with...
Continuing the Green Lantern saga.
And he's doing the Man of Steel origin, which will be good.
But. Wow, yeah.
So he's...
He's the man.
And Josh, I think for you and I, the There was no question.
I agree with Jeff Johns.
Yeah.
You know, the dude has made me interested in stuff I would have no interest.
No interest. None whatsoever.
None. But when we had to think of somebody, the first name that popped into my head and the one that I had no problem explaining was Jason Aaron. We just talked about Scalped, but this year was the year that he came into his own. He did all of these, like all this Marvel work and all these minis and just all this. Like, he'd show up and stuff, and every time he touched something, it was like, where has this guy been all
our lives? He did Wolverine. He did Ghost Rider. He did another Wolverine miniseries.
He did Black Panther. The Penguin one-shot from the Joker's Asylum.
Yeah.
You know, every time one of these things came out, people were talking about it. They were excited, and this is a guy who nobody knew last year.
Yeah. Well, they did, but he was still the guy doing Scalped. He really got into the mainstream this year.
But he showed that he could do stuff other than...
And they're all different.
Yeah.
I mean, the Wolverine story was different than the Ghost Rider was like a grindhouse film. And the current Wolverine arc miniseries is like a kung fu movie. And Scalped is just horrible reality. And he does all the different styles, and he does them all well.
You know, he's a guy who's getting a lot of recognition, and he deserves it. I'm excited to see what he's going to do in the future. But this was a great year for him.
Very good. One of my favorite writers.
Yep.
He also did Punisher one shot, which was good too. Yep.
Which was apparently a lot of.
That's like a match made in heaven. It is. He was.
Yeah, he should do the Punisher. I can see that. That'd be really good.
It was very graphic.
Yeah.
A little shocking.
Excellent. So that was the year in comics. Yeah, you're right about Nova now that I think about it. So, all right.
Over Glamorous?
No, Glamorous I'd still put up.
So who would you take off your list then?
No. You win the lists.
Come on. You taking off Echo? You taking off Young Liars? No. You taking off Uncanny?
I'm not taking off Echo.
Captain Britain?
No, all right. Calm down. All right, let's move along.
You can't have six. You only have five.
And see, this is what we live with every day.
Yeah.
These walls. All right, so before we sign off, we got something kind of we're pretty excited about. Another announcement.
3 weeks in a row.
Yes, but we're excited to let everyone know that we've been working on another website that we're getting ready to launch in 2009. Right now, it is in kind of a private beta mode, but that's going to be coming out. It's going to be coming out of beta hopefully in early 2009. But it's open to the public for you all to come check it out.
You can go there and see it and read it. But you can't interact. You can't post or anything. It's locked at the moment.
Yeah, and we're going to be slowly adding more people to the site, and most likely if you listen to my fanboy, you're one of the first people we want to invite you to. And the site is called Murmur, and you can find that at murmur.com, that M-U-R-M-U-R.com. And
it's more of a general media, general interest site, commentary, thoughts, TV, film, music, technology, lifestyle.
Literature.
It's literature. It's not a... You know, our fanboys are comic-based stuff, but as you know, we do these shows every year. We like doing these shows. We have a lot of other interests, as you can tell from listening to us talk. So we wanted to have another outlet for that. So this is what we've developed.
Yeah. So and we're going to be opening it up to the public through 2009. So stay tuned to that. And the great thing about Murmur is that iFanboy has been mainly we've been writing for you all, and you guys are a great community and leaving great comments and things like that. Murmur is an opportunity for you to get in the mix. In addition to our editorial staff and writing staff, Murmur users will have the ability to write their own articles, and users can vote and leave comments and that sort of thing. So basically, we're building the sandbox for you. And we want everybody to come and play in it. So.
Go check it out, murmur.com.
And stay tuned for more stuff as it develops. We'll be announcing it on iFanboy as well as other places. And hopefully, it'll be another site that you enjoy.
Busy 2009.
Busy 2009,
exciting
indeed.
2009.
Yes, Josh is thrilled. So in the meantime, you can check out iFanboy.com, which you know and love, for the weekly Pick of the Week podcast. Pick of the Week podcast, where we talk about the best book of the week, as well as all the comic book discussion and articles and things like that we've been doing all through 2008 for you.
And you can go to ifanboy.com/store. That's where you can find information about our membership program, as well as you can go to the ifanboy.com/Amazon to find out books to buy that talk about in the video show. And you can do shopping through Amazon there. It's good stuff.
And there's a video show every single – well, almost. this last week, you will have seen the Vault episode that we did of the iFanboy video show. And if you go to revision3.com/iFanboy, you can see that and all the other stuff we did before it. And next week, we're taking the first, probably the only week off ever for the iFanboy video show. So there's actually going to be no show this week on the 7th, I believe.
On the 7th, yes.
The 7th. And then we're back after that.
Just give us the 1 week off, people.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's been 3 years.
Things deserve it. But in the meantime, while you're waiting for the new episode of iFanboy, if you have a TiVo or if you go to YouTube or anything like that, you can go and watch all the previous episodes there as usual.
And you can get an iFanboy t-shirt at their Revision 3 store, the new Revision 3 store. It's at revision3.com/store. They got the iFanboy intern shirt, and they're available for $15.99. Check them out while supplies last. They're only selling them until supplies last, and after that, there's going to be possibly a new shirt.
You can email us at contact@iFanboy. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you call in a voicemail, then make sure you leave your name, where you're from. You know, keep it to the point. Do what you do.
And if you are a fan of the internet and like to have friends on the internet, you can be friends with us. Go to ifanboy.com/about, where you can find links to iFanboy on MySpace, ComicSpace, Verb, Facebook, Twitter, all the things, as well as our personal links, and we want to be your friend. And make sure you check out twitter.com/ifanboy, where you can get instant updates of what's going on in the iFanboy world.
And if you like this show, you should go to iTunes. You should leave us a review, because that's how people find the show. The more reviews there are, the more likely people are to find it when they search for comic book podcasts. And that's super duper. We like that. So
super duper. Super.
Go there and leave us a review, not for the just for the audio show, but for the video show as well. That's, you know, get the word out. It's easy to do it that way. And then better yet, tell your friends and your family and your comic book buddies and all the people that you, you know, rip off every Saturday night at the clubs.
What?
Selling baking soda instead of cocaine again. When you're doing that.
This just went. What was that?
It just got weird.
I don't know how to segue from there. We've told you about the iFanboy memberships. If you want to help support the site, and we do need your help, you can find all about that at ifanboy.com. There's a post up there. But basically, there is a membership available at $4 a month or $42 for the year, or $10 a month at $100 a year. If you sign up for either of those, you're going to get a package with some buttons and stickers and a comic book.
A random one from our
random
collection.
A random comic book. And if you are at the higher rate, the $10 or $100, you're going to get a special members-only t-shirt. So get to ifanboy.com/store, and you can get into that.
Get into it.
Thank you very much,
by the way. Get deep in it.
Yes, and thank you, everybody. It's been a great year. We wouldn't be here without you all, so, you know, thank you again.
Thanks for braving the show.
For participating. So, so until next year, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I actually just showed up. I wanted to say...
Eddie's back.
Merry Holiday.
Who's got the Merlot? We gotta get this guy the Merlot.
Yeah. all right, goodbye.
20 Queen of New York City. When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the junk they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the end.